Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran is off this morning because he's in Prague. So Justin Kaufman will be filling in for him at 6 o'clock for your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. And it's Triple Play Thursday.
Give me a Triple Play Thursday.
It's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call or text us throughout the show. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page. You should like us right now. It's constantly updated during the show. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Subscribe to our podcast. Every single second of every single show is podcast. Lots of people listen to our podcast. We appreciate that. It's free. You can subscribe. Go to iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. You can go to WGNradio.com. Subscribe. It's free. It'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there you go. Coming up this morning, in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Dan Feinberg is going to join us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We talk to him every other week about television. Lots of TV to talk about. He's been reviewing a ton of new shows because the fall TV season has just begun, and it's underway, and we'll check in with all the new shows with Dan. You can follow him on Twitter at The Fine Print and Facebook as well, and that's The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, Fine Print. All right. Also coming up, we are going to get to those moments in movies where that are most paused, meaning, you know, if you're watching it and you want to pause it for a certain reason, we have the movie scenes that have been most paused by on your DVD player or on your DVR or on your VHS, if you want to go back that far. Got a lot of fun stuff to talk about there. Also, we're going to talk about conspiracy theories, man.
Ooh.
So we got a bunch of conspiracy theories. Some of them are hilarious. Some of them are completely ridiculous. And also, we got some scary facts about otherwise adorable animals right here on WGN. So that's what's coming up. Again, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number if you want to join us via talk or text and get your Triple Play request, Triple Play Thursday request in too. All right, let me talk to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm great, Nick. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. So what did you watch? Now, you said you were going to watch a horror movie a day.
Yes.
For the month of October.
Correct.
What did you watch last night?
So last night I watched Black Sunday, also known as The Mask of Satan, directed by the great Mario Bava.
It's known as The Mask of Satan?
Yes, that's actually its original title. And in the Italian version, that's the title card that goes up, is The Mask of Satan.
Wow, I didn't know that. I've seen Black Sunday 9,000 times.
Yeah, and it's spectacular. It's the same thing as Black Sunday.
Yeah.
The version I have is specifically from the original Italian negatives and everything like that. Beautifully restored, awesome looking in black and white on Blu-ray. And it's honestly one of my favorites of that era. Super inspired by the Hammer films, if you ask me.
No question about it.
Definitely their Italy's take on that style of gothic horror. So that'll be great for when I do a couple weeks from now. I'm going to do all Hammer for a week.
Well, you're not going to go wrong there.
No.
Yeah, the Hammer movies are a big a big deal to me. I love them. I especially love Horror of Dracula. That's my favorite Hammer movie of all time. And you know how I feel about Peter Cushing.
Of course.
Peter Cushing's my hero. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be Peter Cushing. I know that's weird. It's very weird. You know, kids are outside playing cops and robbers and stuff, and they want to be like, you know, a baseball player. They want to be an astronaut or something. I wanted to be Van Helsing. I wanted to be Peter Cushing. I love Peter Cushing. He's like just truly one of my favorite people that's ever lived. And when I was a little kid, I loved him so much. Yeah.
And he was never, he never seemed above what he was doing with the Hammer films. He was really into it.
Yeah.
He just said, yes, this is a great opportunity. I'm acting. I'm working. This is fun.
Yeah. And he's fantastic. He's played Sherlock Holmes. He's played Doctor Who. Dr. Frankenstein.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, man. He's in Star Wars. Yeah. And he came back to life in Rogue One. That's probably why it's my favorite Star Wars movie of all time, because they brought Peter Cushing back to life. I actually got teary-eyed during that scene. I know it's weird, and it's, you know, the computer-generated stuff, and the, but like the, whoever did the voice sounds exactly like Peter Cushing, and I was just like, I was watching the movie, because I love Peter Cushing. I love him, man. He's my favorite. So right on the end table next to my couch at home, I've got the really beautiful bust of Peter Cushing with the two candlesticks holding as the shape of a cross from the ending of Horror of Dracula. He's just the coolest. So yeah, Hammer, you can't go wrong, man. Hammer movies are great.
Yeah, also looking forward to next week, which will be all zombies.
Ah.
So I'm going to run through Romero's stuff, a little bit of Fulci, a little bit of Shaun of the Dead as well, and see what else I can drag up and play.
Zombieland.
Yeah, gotta have zombie.
Double Tap's coming out in a couple of weeks.
That is true.
I'm so excited about that movie.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see it. I love the first one. I thought the first one was great.
And it's still mind-blowing that now all four of those actors have been nominated or have won an Academy Award.
Well, Abigail Breslin had been nominated
prior to,
and so did Woody Harrelson in the original one. But now everybody and Stone won.
Yeah, Stone won.
Yeah.
La La Land.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's go to the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hiya, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
A little wet out there today.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it'll be a little wet, I guess.
I guess through our show.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And it's supposed to stop around. Right. So it's just going to rain. It's going to rain now until I get off the air.
Yeah, and then
so
I think
a good
partly
reason to stay in and listen.
Right. By the way, I did give some trash talking with Jeannie.
Oh, you did? How did that go? Because Milwaukee got knocked out by Walgreens.
Yep. By Walgreens, right? And she's a Brewers fan. So, and I went off of Tom Hush's suggestion. So as soon as I walked in the bedroom, she was still trying to wake up. And I said, honey, do you know the Heimlich maneuver? What? Because the Brewers choked.
Oh! Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on.
All right.
Hold it. Now hold on.
So thank you, Tom, for that.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
Yeah.
My jaw's still sore.
Yeah. She belted you one, huh?
No.
Yeah. That's pretty... Well, listen, hey, you know, Turnabout's fair play, man. She was giving you grief.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
About the Cubs.
Right.
And so, you know.
Turnabout's fair play. We did hug afterwards, so we're friends still.
Yeah. I'm sure she probably gave you a pretty hard time after the Bears opener. I would imagine that was probably not a pleasant few hours to be around.
That's right, because it was the Packers, and she's obviously a Packers fan too.
Right.
So, yeah, I enjoyed it this morning or yesterday morning. But
yeah,
I'm doing good though, Nick.
All right, very cool, man. And Vic, of course, is in the newsroom keeping an eye on everything. And we've got a flash flood warning, and it's through the end of my through the end of my show, and that's for Cook County, right?
Yes, sir.
So it's us, Cook County, everybody. So stay safe out there. It's really wet. I'm looking out the window right now. It doesn't appear to be raining right now. A little drizzly right now, but it's been on and off all morning long. Sometimes it was pouring. Sometimes it would just stop. And I think that's the way it's going to be pretty much all through the morning.
One of the trouble spots is Lakeshore Drive. Apparently, a lot of the exit ramps are flooded.
Yeah, that happens. Oh, man, that happens very frequently.
Yeah.
Very, very frequently. So, anyway, we'll keep an eye on everything that's happening, your traffic, your weather, your news, all that important and cool stuff right here on WGN. Most paused movie scenes of all time, conspiracy theories, and more. But right now, we're going to break because when we come back, Dan Feinberg is going to be with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And we got a lot of TV to talk about.
TV party tonight! We're going to have our
TV party tonight. All right! We're going to have a TV party, all right!
Tonight!
Saturday Night Live!
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here on 720 WGN on downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your request in now, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, if you would like to join us right here on 720 WGN. So coming up a little bit later on, we are going to be talking about the most paused movie scenes, talking about conspiracy theories, and might even talk about some really scary facts about otherwise adorable animals. That's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Right now, though, we want to visit with our good friend Dan Feinberg. Dan joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He's TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always a lot of TV to talk about, especially now, because the fall season has just begun. And Dan has been reviewing all a ton of the new shows, and we're going to talk about all of them. And if you want to, we can listen to this, 312-981-7200. Let's get Dan on the show. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. It sounded very much like a threat when you said we're going to talk about all of them. I appreciate that you warned people off.
No. We have to give them, we have to report what's happening in the world on the TV. You started out, you did review the season premiere of SNL, which had, pretty low numbers. It was down 15% from last year's season debut. What is that? You think people are just... first of all, Woody Harrelson, do you think Woody Harrelson's not like a giant name to draw him in? And also, do you think people are just getting tired of Alec Baldwin doing Trump?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think probably that Woody Harrelson is not himself a huge draw. I think people like Woody Harrelson, but I don't know how many people were like, okay, I don't watch SNL, but gotta watch for Woody. And I like Woody Harrelson, but
I do too.
He's not that kind of draw. So, so I think that has something to do with it. I think probably that the show has alienated some viewers at this point. And whether that includes, honestly, people on both sides of the aisle, I think that obviously there are the people on the right who are sick and tired of whatever, and so they've stopped watching. But, I can't possibly be the only person on the left who's really bored with what they're doing with Donald Trump, and I know that you are also fatigued with the Alec Baldwin of it all. So I think it's probably a little of that. And then, honestly, really and truly, for all of that, everything's down. Like, if you look at the broadcast ratings across the board, it is shocking. We talked last week about how the Emmys were down. Well, SNL's down. Everything's down. The ratings are dramatically low across the board, and that'll have some good side for people who want to actually make sure that the shows that they tune into are going to make it through a full season, because, it's going to be hard for them to cancel anything. But, basically, broadcast television is no longer measurable in traditional ways, and at a certain point we need to stop reporting on overnight ratings at all, but here we are.
Okay. Well, we'll see what's going on with some of the new shows that you review. You've reviewed a bunch of new shows, and we're going to get to those, but let's talk about SNL. I thought it had moments. I thought there were some funny bits. I'm in the minority on Billie Eilish, I don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe it's just because I'm a 54-year-old man and I just kind of sat in front of the TV going, I don't get it. So,
I thought she was decent, and I am always a fan of anybody who wants to play around with the limitations of the SNL stage, so yeah. I appreciated her going all Fred Astaire and doing the rotating stage thing. I thought that was amusing, and then I thought that she was smart to just make the second performance just a duet. I was wholly satisfied by her. I didn't rush out and
everybody
buy her tape or anything.
Her tape. everybody, uh, Everybody was except me. Like, I, you know, like the feedback was always like she was, everybody said that she was pretty much the highlight of the show. But like some of the things, like the cold open, you know, you talk about it in your review. Like they trot out the Kanye West, even though Kanye West had nothing to do with it. The whole Liev Schreiber, Ray Donovan thing, I didn't quite get. They had to do the impeachment thing, and the impeachment thing broke, you know, during their writing week. So of course they had to do it, but I think they could have done it better.
They could have done it 85 different ways. Instead, they did basically what they do half the time anyway, which is kind of a cavalcade of impressions, and that is what the show is all too frequently. Again, and I've said this over and over and over again, I think they are so unable to figure out a thing to do with Alec Baldwin's version of Trump. To me, they need to eliminate him entirely. If you want to be left-leaning, as the show clearly does at this moment, which is, you know, Lorne Michaels would tell you that in moments of Republican presidencies, they want to be leaning the other way because basically they want to be speaking truth to power. That's what he thinks the show is supposed to do.
Right.
Whether the show is doing that or not, whatever. But, you know, why not do, God, if you want to do impressions, why not do, say, for example, a thing about how the conservative media is freaking out about the impeachment and do impressions of a handful of Fox News people and a couple of basement-dwelling YouTube, video bloggers, whatever, and just don't have the predictable five impressions that you trot out every single time with no angle to any of them. You know, there's nothing to Kate McKinnon's Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani is much crazier than she is giving him any credit for.
Right.
It's bizarre.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally get it. Now, what did you think of, I want to get into some of the other things that I thought was actually funny, but Bowen Yang and Chloe Fineman made their debuts. What did you think of that?
I thought that Bowen Yang was good because there are people that the show hasn't been able to depict because they've never had a straight out Asian male.
Right.
And so, you know, we're in a presidential candidate where, you know, a campaign where, my goodness, there's an Asian male running for president for the Democrats. Where
right.
They were either going to have to ignore him completely or, hey, look, oh my goodness, there's an Asian in the cast. Wonderful. So I thought that was all good. Again, though, there's very little he can do if they don't have a particular approach to anybody. And I didn't feel like they had an approach to Andrew Yang. I didn't feel like they had an approach to Kim Jong-un. There was no angle to it. It was just, yay, look, we can have someone play these roles. Woohoo! Which I said woohoo also, but the next step beyond the woohoo is, okay, what's actually going to be funny now? And they didn't get to that with much of anything. And Chloe Fineman, you know, again, not all that much of an angle on Marianne Williamson, but amusing enough, you know, it was there, it was gone, and then she popped up again later in the show, I guess in the Downton Abbey thing.
Right.
Which was, again, not bad. She could be okay. I don't know that they gave her enough to do again where you could go, ah, oh, she's a total asset. Bring on more Chloe Fineman.
Right.
But she seemed fine.
Yeah, no, I thought she was fine. I thought she was. I laughed at the Marianne Williamson thing. I thought it was pretty funny. I think she did okay work for out the rest of the, wherever they plugged her in. I thought the apple picking thing was very funny. That cracked me up.
It was a good end of show bit, and it built off of the A.D. Bryant is finding everything amusing this week aspect of the show, and so I was fine with that. You know, I definitely chuckled more at that than at any of the other sketches during the show. So,
right.
Yay.
Yeah. And I thought the football coach thing was really stupid, but I thought Heidi Gardner was funny. That I thought
like you, I am happy anytime they give her a showcase.
Yep.
And she was amusing.
Yes, she was. Not a great sketch, though. Obviously.
No, that really and truly in a different world, that probably also ought to have been a 1255 sketch. And
yeah.
you are only entitled to one 1255 sketch right. per show, and I think they exceeded that number.
Funniest thing of the night, David Ortiz. Keenan, by the way, Keenan was the MVP, as he often is. He was funny, I think, in everything that he did. You know, the sketch where the wardrobe malfunction happened and everybody just completely lost it. He was hilarious in that sketch as well. But it was really fun watching A.D. Bryant just lose it. Everybody loves it when people break, and that was probably the most watched sketch on YouTube, I would imagine.
Definitely, that was more aggressive than your typical people break sketch. You know, like, I think normally when we get that kind of thing, it's usually Kate McKinnon basically making people break by being crazy. You know, one of her, like, one of the characters who was abducted by aliens, for example. That one is always good for making the guest hosts laugh. But yeah, it was funny just how far gone Katie Bryant was in that sketch. I don't even, and here's the thing, I don't even remember, what was the punchline of that sketch otherwise anyway?
I don't even remember.
Excellent.
I gotta tell you, I don't
that
even.
Is, that is some fine writings that Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and it was, but it was like Debbie Downer level break, you know. But yeah, I mean that was very amusing. But again, the David Ortiz thing, I love it every time he does it. It's hysterical every time.
But what a thin weekend update. Only one guest sees it. You're missing Leslie Jones now, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really, when it ended, when they said this for Weekend Update, I'm Colin Jones, I was like, what? It's over? I was kind of shocked at how short the update was.
Short and with really virtually nothing to say. So, yeah, absolutely, David Ortiz was the highlight of that sketch. And, you know, I always liked the David Ortiz, and I was happy in this case because I'm happy that David Ortiz is okay. I was truly worried about David Ortiz, so I'm happy both that he is okay and that Keenan was able to bring him back to Weekend Update because that made me pleased.
Well, we got this weekend to look forward to. I'm really looking forward to it. It's Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Taylor Swift is the musical guest, and the promos that they cut for it are very funny. So have you seen the promo where she will not put down her three Emmys?
I have not, but I can imagine how that would work. No, it is such a good double. Like, I will watch Taylor Swift do whatever musically she's doing this week, and I will watch Phoebe Waller-Bridge happily, and I'm looking forward to it. Let me tell you, though, what it's going to take to get ratings bumped back up. It is not going to be Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
No,
much
not.
As I love her, I do not expect mainstream American audiences are going to be like, yay, the Fleabag woman.
It's true. All right, Dan, hang on, okay, man?
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we are talking TV as we do every 2 weeks. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Okay, we'll take a break for the news, and when we come back, more TV with Dan Feinberg. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to have some fun here and talk about the most paused scenes, you know, when you're watching it on DVD or you're watching it back in the old days on VHS. Which scenes are the most paused in movie history? we'll get into that. We're also going to talk about some conspiracy theories as well. And if you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text and Triple Play Thursday requests. All right. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. All right. Let's get back with Dan here. Dan, welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, let's talk about some of the new shows. There's a lot here that you've reviewed, and I've only seen a couple of the new shows, but I'm interested in many of them. Let's start with one that I've seen and that I really, really liked, the pilot episode. I really enjoyed Evil. I thought it was really terrific. How many episodes have you seen?
I've seen 4 episodes, which is more than I've seen of any other new show, so I am well on top of things. I can tell you that I don't want to say I was disappointed by the next 2, but the first episode really was kind of creepy and a little bit disturbing and a little bit funny. The next 2 episodes aren't really as creepy or disturbing, and then it kind of gets back into spooky, disturbing, evil gear in the 4th episode.
Okay.
But even the 2 middle ones were definitely not bad, and it's an above average procedural, and one of the few procedurals that I watched this fall where I actually cared about the actual cases of the week, which is apparently a very difficult thing to do because so many shows really cannot do it at all, apparently.
Yeah.
So.
Well, tell everybody about Evil, and
The ephemeral concept versus good, or the TV show on CBS?
The TV show on CBS.
Oh, okay. I just thought we were going to discuss deep philosophical.
Yeah. That's the profile of my show. Sure. Yeah. That's what. Oh man.
Anyway, so evil. It comes from the Kings, Robert and Michelle King, who also did The Good Wife and The Good Fight, and a little weird, quirky Washington horror comedy thing called Brain Dead that a few people really liked a couple of years ago. Anyway, it stars Katja Herbers, who people may or may not know from Manhattan or Westworld or The Leftovers, as a forensic psychologist and former mountain climber. A little bit unclear why she's a former mountain climber, but right. It's what she is. Who is basically working for the DA's office, and her primary job is to come into court and say that people accused of crimes are all sane, to cut off insanity defenses at the knees. But then she has one client who maybe he's not so much sane. Maybe he's even, as his wife suggests, possessed by a demon. And then she also meets a team of church-sponsored, Catholic Church in this case, investigators. One of them is an aspiring priest, played by Mike Coulter. The other is basically a professional skeptic, played by Asif Mandavi. And that's where things go. Guess what? She's going to become curious about whether there's more to sanity in the world than she's been scientifically giving it credit for, and maybe there is, and maybe there isn't. So I thought the first episode really did have a very good mixture of disturbing stuff, but also truly funny stuff. Yeah. To my mind, the next couple episodes maybe go a little bit more funny, and then, like I said, the fourth episode is back to disturbing, but it's really solid, and solid in a way that not many network dramas are these days. So you really liked it?
I did, very much. And those scenes with George, I'm telling you, and I'm a massive horror fan, Dan, and I was sitting on my couch kind of freaking out watching it. And I thought it went a little further than most. The whole cutting off the finger stuff, I was like, whoa. I was like, this is CBS. What's going on here? The general concept of it, I think, is really a lot of fun. And I happen to be, Dan, one of those, like, ridiculous X-Files dorks. And it was appointment TV for me. And, I mean, this is obviously just, you know, it's a variation on that formula. And I'm all about it, man. I really liked it. And I love the lead. I remember her from The Leftovers. And I kind of stopped watching Westworld. Because I didn't know what the hell was going on, but I really love her, and I thought it was great, and I thought the chemistry between everybody involved was really good. I thought the first episode was really terrific, and I'm looking forward to seeing more.
It's solid, and it's, you know, I've been mentioning it for months now as being kind of the network drama that is closest to interesting or intriguing or must watch or whatever. And, you know, I don't know that necessarily if this were to have popped up on HBO or FX or Netflix that there would have been a huge amount of enthusiasm for it. But I think it does what it does in a difficult space, namely network TV drama, much better than it probably needs to. Yeah. I appreciated that.
Okay, cool. Now, the other one that I did watch, I have a few more on my DVR that I have to catch up on, but I did watch The Unicorn, that is it's a sitcom with Walton Goggins, because when you think sitcom, you think Walton Goggins. So tell everybody about The Unicorn.
The Unicorn stars Walton Goggins as a grieving widower, because when you think sitcoms, you think main guy who's a grieving widower. It's been a year since his wife died, and he's been basically trying his best to raise his two daughters. One's 14, one's 12, and he's in wildly over his head. And rather than suggesting other ways that they might help him or, you know, improve the quality of their life, his friends decide it's time for him to get laid and push him abruptly out into the dating pool, where he's shocked to discover that in the 20 years that he was with one woman or grieving, that things have changed, and dating apps and stuff like that. And it's really a showcase for Walton Goggins and the fact that he really can do this and does it entirely likably, so credit to him for that. It's a good supporting cast, Rob Corddry, Omar Benson Miller, several people who aren't from Ballers, most specifically Michaela Watkins, who's always good in things.
Yep.
And the two girls who play his daughters are really good also, and totally likable in their own respect. This is one where I've seen three, and I didn't find the pilot all that funny, but I found it okay, you know, a little bit charming. That's about it. And then the next two episodes, I would say definitely not funnier, and perhaps a little bit less charming. So if you're waiting for it to settle in and immediately become brilliant, that is not happening. But if you are simply there for Walton Goggins and for Michaela Watkins and for Rob Corddry, etc., there are worse ways to spend 22 minutes a week.
You know what? That's kind of how I felt about the first episode. I was like, okay, you know, it wasn't great or anything. I'm glad that you mentioned the kids, because I thought the kids were really strong. And in fact, I think everybody in it is really strong. I just don't, it didn't grab me. I didn't laugh very much. I mean, it just kind of flew by. I was like, okay, because I like the people that are in it. And personally, I think Michaela Watkins is like a national treasure at this point. I just think she's fantastic in everything that she does. And I liked it, and it did prove that Walton Goggins can be just like charming and not crazy, and can play, you know, can play it real and play it likable. It was fine. It flew by. I'm going to watch it again. I didn't think it was anything, you know, anything really special, but I also didn't think it was bad. I just thought I liked the cast, and I thought it was fine.
Yep, that's what it's got going for it. And you know, the next episode, and I talked about this in my review on The Hollywood Reporter, that the next episode, it focuses on the friends being worried that the main character has anger issues. And all I could think while watching the entire episode was, I've seen Walton Goggins play characters with anger issues before. It usually involved more torture, killing, and swearing. And this is a really, really chill version of Walton Goggins with anger issues. So I feel like that's what the entire show is about. It's here's him saying, if you think I can only play outsized, dangerous, scary characters, sometimes funny in those ways also, here, look at me, I'm playing a normal guy. If anyone ever needs me to do this again, I'm totally capable of doing it. And he is, so that's fine.
Yeah. Who's behind this show? Who the creators?
It is a couple guys who I honestly don't know, and then the main producer behind it is Aaron Kaplan, who produces like half of the shows on CBS, which is part of why it feels like a single cam version of Kevin Can Wait or Man with a Plan. It's just slightly more polished than those shows and slightly less pandering. But in terms of the complexity of the situations or the complexity of the punchlines or, I don't know, the awareness of what modern life is like on any level, I feel like it's very comparably embalmed to those shows. I think it is better than those shows, but only by a little. I think that you could take basically this entire premise and someone with a little bit more guts could turn this into a really good show with the exact same cast and the exact same premise. I don't get the feeling that this has really good show potential, but it definitely has. Here's 21 minutes.
Yep.
It's fine.
That's exactly. I agree with every word you said on that, Dan. All right. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Lots more TV to talk about as the new fall season is unveiled right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg joins us every couple of weeks, and today is that day. And he's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and he joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So they announced that BoJack Horseman will end after season 6. How are we going to look back on this show?
we're going to look back at it as one of the best shows of the past decade and one of the best things Netflix has ever produced, and as honestly as one of the best animated shows in television history. I think that's how we're going to look at it. I don't think it's The Simpsons because, you know, it's just not going to get to 700 episodes. So, oh well.
Yeah.
But in terms of what it does and how it has shown what you can do in terms of treating extremely serious topics like mental illness, depression, etc., and treating them in ways that are honorable, sometimes narratively innovative, and often still hilarious and sometimes utterly gutting, I think that's how we're going to look back at this show, is as one of the all-time greats. And the good thing is that it's not one of those shows that has a specific ending it needs to stick. So basically what Netflix was announced was that the sixth season is going to be the last season. It's going to be split into two halves. One is premiering later this month. One is premiering in early 2020. And so, yeah, you know, we'll get two more sections to enjoy. We can pretend they're different seasons if we want, but probably that won't really work because it involves a certain amount of delusion.
But
on the other hand, look, six seasons entirely on its own terms and good, you know, as opposed to Tuca and Birdie, which I'm still actively angry about that Netflix canceled right. inexplicably after one season, and what up with that, Netflix? Great show. We'll be sad to see it go.
You know, when I first started watching BoJack Horseman, as it went along, I just kept thinking to myself, this show's got no business being this good. Like, it was one of those shows where, like, I couldn't believe what I was watching. Like, I was like, how is this show with this plot and these characters destroying me, like, on a regular basis? It's such a great show and so creative, and it really, like, as you said, dealing with real issues in such a great way. And it's also very funny and very heartbreaking, and all of the voice talent that's involved does fantastic job. I agree with you. I think it's going to go down in history as one of the best animated series of all time.
The one thing we're definitely going to look back and wonder is how on earth did it have its run and never win at this point any Emmys at all. Yeah. So, well, got one more year to avoid screwing this up, Emmy voters, and yeah. I am still so perplexed that Will Arnett could not either be nominated or win an Emmy for the episode that's an entirely a Will Arnett monologue that's magnificent. Right. I am still angry about that.
Right. I still, my favorite episode of all time is still the underwater episode. That's still it's still one of my favorite episodes of TV ever.
Without any question, if that were the only standout episode the show had ever had, you could go there. That is an all-timer animated or any kind of TV episode, but the show has had four or five episodes that were comparably nearly as good, and really, I think, you know, there's still, people are always going to have the, oh, it's a Hollywood satire with animals, it's not going to be for me feeling, and people will be discovering BoJack as long as people are still watching TV.
I agree. And I urge people, if that kind of puts you off, I urge people, it's more than that. It's much, much more than that, and you should watch it. It's a really great show, and I'm going to miss it when it's gone. So, all right, go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you, and also it is one of those shows that takes a few episodes to become what it is. So basically, the first five episodes are cute and a little light and frivolous. It only gets better from there. So.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I've got two episodes of this because there's only been two episodes. I've got two episodes of this one on my DVR at home, and I'm not sure why I haven't jumped into it yet. But when I get home, I always watch the, you know, whenever I get home from work, one of the first things I do is, I always watch the late night guys. I just do. I watch, you know, my favorite late night guys, and then, you know, a couple of hours have gone by at that point, and sometimes I need to go to sleep. So I've missed and I've put off, but I'm really interested in it, and I love Michael Sheen so much. Prodigal Son. And my producer Tom watched it. Tom, have you watched both episodes or just the one?
I've just seen the premiere, and I watched it on TV live. And while I thought Michael Sheen was great, and I think the concept is great, and it could be great, it just came off to me as a little bit of a discount Hannibal. Whether you want to say the TV show or the film series, whatever. I don't know. Something just felt off to me. I thought the tone was kind of strange, trying to be kind of jokey and dark at the same time, but never really finding the right balance between the two. But I'm definitely willing to give it more of a chance because I think there are strong performances to be had.
Okay. What do you think of Prodigal Son?
But I think Tom's pretty close on that. Like, the Hannibal comparisons are both completely inevitable, and, you know, you can't avoid it. It is still a show about a forensic FBI agent-type person. He's no longer with the FBI, so not exactly that, who consults with a serial killer because he sees the world through the eyes of a serial killer. It's added a little bit of an extra twist that the serial killer is actually his father, so there's that. I don't think... You know, in terms of comparison to the TV show, the gap between them in terms of aspiration and all manner of things is so vast that, Prodigal Son cannot compete.
I haven't even seen Prodigal Son, and I know that to be the case, because Hannibal was one of my favorite shows. And I loved that show.
Well, just Hannibal was a show that remains ridiculous that it was ever on network TV at all.
And for three seasons too, which is unbelievable.
Oh, ridiculous. And whereas Prodigal Son absolutely totally is a show that belongs on network TV. It was made for network TV. It feels like it was made for network TV. It is no edgier than anything else on network TV. That is what it is. So you either find a way to enjoy it within the confines of that. And I enjoy watching Michael Sheen chew scenery. That is always entertaining to me. I was led to believe from The Good Fight that some people apparently can get tired of Michael Sheen chewing scenery. I cannot, so that's fine.
Because I know that The Good Fight, they're actually CBS is actually they're actually showing that on regular CBS. They haven't they?
They showed the first season over the summer, so they're done with that now. It's now all safely back only in the confines of CBS All Access, and it still is a really good show. I recommend that show, and I think Michael Sheen's performance in the past season really should have been nominated for an Emmy. It was utterly over the top and ridiculous, but nobody does crazy-eyed wonderment like he does at this point on TV.
I love the guy. I'm hoping that they show the second season on CBS because I don't have CBS access. But like you, I could watch Michael Sheen eat scenery for hours.
So there's that. But honestly, in this show, it's 5 or 6 minutes per episode, and that's only a little. Bellamy Young, who some people will remember and will have truly loved from Scandal, because she was wonderful on Scandal, she was also very good, and she is every bit as capable of chewing scenery as Michael Sheen. And so you give me those scenes, and the leading man, Tom Payne, is reasonably funny and able to compete with them. And
Dan, I'm sorry, hang on for a second. We got a break here. We got to do a break, but as soon as we come back, I want to hear more about Prodigal Son, okay?
Okay.
Dan Feinberg's with us. We got to take a break, but we're going to come back. We got the news coming up, and then when we get right after the news, we will jump back into Prodigal Son and more TV talk with Dan Feinberg right here on 720 WGN. Wow, all right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And, it is a Thursday morning. AAA Thursday will be kicking off. It's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the most paused moments in movies, meaning pausing your DVD player or pausing your VCR, if you still have one. And then we're going to talk about some conspiracy theories and some scary facts about adorable animals and much more right here on 720 WGN for this Thursday morning. I'm Nick DiGilio, here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran, who's not in, he's in Prague, actually, for the Hawks game. So Justin Kaufman will be sitting in this morning for Steve. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And joining us now for his biweekly visit is Dan Feinberg, TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Before the news, I rudely interrupted Dan as he was talking about Prodigal Son on Fox. Okay, Dan, please continue. Prodigal Son.
Oh, if only I remembered what sentence I was in the middle of, and I could have just picked up, but I am not that good, Nick.
You said that you were talking, at this point, you were talking about how good Bellamy Young is and can chew scenery just as much as Michael Sheen. That's pretty much where you were.
So she's excellent, and Tom Payne, who's the leading man, is also pretty funny and able to compete with them. Not really, he's not really their equal, but whatever. But we were talking about Evil earlier, and I mentioned that I could tell you the procedural plots of all four episodes I've seen, which is rare because procedurals tend to be interchangeable. Man, I couldn't tell you what the cases are that they're solving in the first three episodes of Prodigal Son. If you held matches to my feet, I watched these episodes, I guess, probably like a week and a half ago. I couldn't tell you what any of the three cases were. A single detail about them. They are so interchangeable and boring. And so you've got this show where there is the aspect of it that I like just fine and would happily watch, but I'm not going to watch a weekly interchangeable procedural without any spirit or flair to it. And Prodigal Son really is both of those two things. It's the fun scenery chewing show, and then it's a boring as heck procedural. So I don't know what I can do, because I'm really not interested in the boring as heck procedural. I'm perfectly happy to watch the other, but it's too complicated.
Okay. All right, so that's Prodigal Son on Fox. All right, I haven't watched this one yet, but I've found the trailers and everything to be pretty intriguing. Tell us about ABC's new show, Emergence. I'm trying to make sense of what they have been showing in the promos for it.
Emergence is one. ABC, for the record, got second episodes out to us of absolutely nothing. So
oh, wow.
I can not tell you what the second episode is. It is on my DVR from earlier this week, but I have not gotten to it. You know, on one hand, it's effectively the same sort of mythology-driven, semi-supernatural, possibly maybe show that ABC has been trying to do since Lost.
Right.
And we've tried one basically every season, and mostly they've failed aggressively. And even the ones that have gotten second seasons, like the Omar Epps drama Resurrection, failed in their second season and didn't go anywhere. And almost all of them left the audience that attempted to watch them completely and totally infuriated. So on one hand, it's a show about a police chief, played by Alison Tolman, who's wonderful, who finds a mysterious girl after a mysterious plane crash, and it's all mysterious and whatever. And you can either deeply invest in the mystery or not. On the other hand, though, it's a really, really charming and likable family drama. So Clancy Brown plays Alison Tolman's father, and you've got Donald Faison from Scrubs and other various things as her ex-husband. And the thing that struck me about the show was how little contrived drama there was in the pilot. It's almost shockingly likable, simply as a, here's a family that was split up by divorce and now they're interacting, and okay, there's a new, somewhat strange girl in their life, and, you know, maybe she's a robot, maybe she's an alien, maybe she's a, I'm not sure what the other options are, werewolf, vampire, who knows? Again, I need to watch episode two. It might all be made clear. But I don't care about it on the it's an ABC supernatural sci-fi whatever genre show. I care about it in a, okay, this is a potentially decent family show with a bunch of actors in it who I really like. And so I'm definitely prepared to give it a handful of episodes simply because I like the cast.
Okay.
And I think they're doing nice things with them. I don't care at all about any of the mysteries, and I'm okay with that, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I really like the cast a lot, too. Any chance I get to see Clancy Brown, I'm a happy man.
he works a lot. I mean, you could have seen him last season on Schooled on ABC. I don't believe he's there anymore because he's on Emergence,
right?
At least as long as it lasts.
Okay. Good cast, though. So Emergence, and again, why did ABC only send out one? Do you know why they only sent out one episode for you guys?
You know, I don't know the answer. They didn't, and it's frustrating because they had several of the more promising shows. So I have yet to watch a second episode of Stumptown. Second episode aired last night. It's on my DVR now. I will get to it at some point. They didn't send out a second episode of Mixed-ish. I watched the second episode on, I guess it was Tuesday, just on normal TV. And it's frustrating because it means my reviews aren't as considered as they should be. I don't have enough information, and I don't have a good answer for why that is. It is frustrating, but it's also a little inside baseball. So what can you do? It's,
okay,
you know, I watch what I'm given.
I forgot to mention that I did watch the first episode of Stumptown, and I enjoyed it. I happen to be a big fan of Colby Smulders. I think she's fantastic, and I've always loved her. Even though I didn't watch How I Met Your Mother, I watched it a little bit, but I was never a big, you know, watcher of that show. But I really like her, and I think it's a nice showcase for her. At least the first episode was a really nice showcase for her.
I think that's my instinct as well. That was one of the ones that that other colleagues reviewed, because I could only review 10 new shows last week, and I think there were 13 premiering.
Right, right.
So what can you do? But no, I think Stumptown is promising, and it is a really good potential vehicle for Colby Smulders, and I hope that, you know, I hope it lives up to her, because she is really good and has always been really good, and she deserves the chance to have a show that lets her be, you know, a little badass, and I hope it becomes that show.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Mixed-ish, since we're on the ABC thing. You know, a lot of people love Black-ish, which I think is a really... I'm starting to catch up on that show. I was never a regular watcher of it, but I really have grown to really, really like it a lot. And I know I'm way late to the train on that one, but I really do enjoy it. I have not seen Mixed-ish, or I'm sorry, I have not seen Grown-ish. But where does Mixed-ish, you know, you've seen the two episodes of it. Where does it fit in here?
I think it's better initially than Grown-ish was. Grown-ish took a while to find itself, and I'm still not sure I think it's all that successful. I think it, you know, is somewhat hampered by the fact that Zoe, the character who they built the spinoff around, was just never really all that interesting a character. Whereas this is a prequel, and it's based on the Tracy Ellis Ross character, who always had this kind of strange backstory that the show gave out in bits and pieces, and so now we're getting to see it. It's about that character, Rainbow, and her experiences growing up in the mid-80s, basically finding herself back in mainstream society after growing up the first 12 years of her life on a strange commune. And so it's a little bit kind of the Goldbergs style, the 80s pop culture references left and right.
Yeah.
It's a little bit issue-oriented in the Black-ish way, the way the Black-ish does wonderfully. I don't think it's on that level yet, but it's a really good cast. So you've got Tika Sumpter, who plays Rainbow's mother, and Mark Paul Gosselaar, who plays her father. Unfortunately, neither of them has been given much to do so far. Gary Cole plays one of the kids' grandfathers, also hasn't been given much to do. But ABC really always does well when it comes to casting young actors. And the three young actors who play the kids on the show are all super. And to me, when a show like this has the young actors in place, and you know that Gary Cole, Mark Paul Gosselaar, and Tika Sumpter, under the right circumstances, can be good, that to me is a lot of potential. Mm. So I'm definitely giving this one... I'm perfectly happy to give this one, you know, 5 to 10 episodes to see where it goes.
Okay. You know, whenever we mention Mark Paul Gosselaar, I always, always miss Pitch. I loved that show, and I just thought it was great, and I still miss it. Is it wrong for me to keep missing that show?
I don't know that it is. At THR, I do a weekly podcast, and my co-host on that podcast, Leslie Goldberg, still loves that show, and she still pines for it.
Yep.
So you are definitely not alone. And it came, I don't want to say it came ridiculously close to getting revived amidst a bunch of negotiations in the spring, but it came somewhat close. And so maybe it might come close again. That's one of the things about all of the streaming services and all of that that we have burgeoning everywhere, is that they all need content. And so, you know, if there's a passionate fan base for Pitch, maybe someday its time will come around again. I don't know why Kylie Bunbury isn't the star of everything right now.
I agree.
That makes me very unhappy.
I agree. Yeah, I just thought that show was so great. So anyway. All right, Dan, we didn't even, you know, there's so many more reviews that you have, but if everybody wants to check it out, you can go to The Hollywood Reporter and check out all the latest reviews, and at the fine print, F-I-E-N. What are you working on now, Dan?
Well, what am I working on? I've been watching episodes of Big Mouth because it returns this week. It is always entertaining. I'm just watching that for fun, darn it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the thing I've been enjoying that I've been watching today leading up to this is Genndy Tartakovsky, who people know from Samurai Jack.
Yeah.
He has a new animated series on Adult Swim called Primal, which is about a caveman and his dinosaur, but it's all done dialogue-free and Genndy Tartakovsky style. And
it is really cool. I just want you to know.
It premieres on Sunday night.
Tom is losing his mind right now. I just want you to know that.
No, it is very cool and very ambitious, and occasionally it's kind of breathtaking,
the
ambition it has. So, really impressive. If you're impressed with the guy's animation style and you think it's a cool idea to get, you know, a guy and a dinosaur and no dialogue for 22 minutes per episode, definitely check out Prime.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. By the way, before we get out of here, I find Cake to be weirdly entertaining on FXX.
I've only watched a few minutes of it, but, you know, why not? There's all this short form craziness going on the internet. Why shouldn't someone be trying to find a home for it?
Yeah.
So, why not? Approach to Kate.
Yeah, I liked it. And my only problem, really quickly, is that I wanted more credits. Like, there's no credits. Like, there are certain things that I really loved in it, but I don't know who did them. And that's the only thing I'll have to look them up online, I guess.
That is not good on their part. They should be doing a much better job because it really should be kind of a showcase program.
I agree.
If you don't tell people who did it.
Right.
So, that's too bad.
Yep. Okay, Dan, thanks a lot. We will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, buddy, take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Always look forward to his visits. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll talk to him in a couple of weeks. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another. I hear you singing in the wire.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a wet Thursday morning. Wet out there tonight. That's my Al Pacino from Glengarry Glen Ross, everybody. Thank you very much. I said, wet out there tonight. Did you know that line? Did you know that?
Yeah.
Wet out there tonight.
Spectacular. What a reading.
Thank you. stay dry, everybody. There is a flash flood warning in effect here at for Cook County all the way up until basically the end of my show near 5. So stay dry out there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number on Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, be Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Who requested the Glenn Campbell?
That's coming to us from Dave in Monroe.
Dave in Monroe, Wichita lineman. You know, we were talking to Dan Feinberg there about the TV there. Did you ever watch the show Pitch?
I watched a little bit of it. I did enjoy it, but that was during my days of, I think I was just starting college and didn't have cable.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched what little I could, and I thought it was a really good show with a great premise. Obviously, it was great to see Zach Morris all grown up.
He was great.
He was very
on
good.
That show. He was great on that show.
Not as good as Franklin and Bash.
Well, I didn't watch Franklin and Bash, but he was also, wasn't he on? Am I wrong here? But didn't he do a run on NYPD Blue? Didn't Mark Paul Glosser do NYPD Blue? Like, and that was really to shake the Zach image? Or am I nuts? No, Ricky Schroeder.
Was it Ricky Schroeder?
Yeah, Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah, he's in it.
Wait, he was too?
Yeah, he's definitely in the final season.
Okay, because Ricky Schroeder also did NYPD Blue.
Lose that kind of boyish image.
Yeah. Well, and he was calling himself Rick at that point.
Rick Schroeder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't call myself Nicky DiGilio.
Fair enough.
You know, I'm a 54-year-old man. Mm. I was Nicky, though, when I was a kid.
Yeah, I was Tommy.
Because, well, my dad's Nick.
Yeah.
So I was Nicky, because I'm not a junior.
Yeah.
I'm not a junior. My dad and I have different middle names. Mm-hmm. So I'm technically not a junior. But it was like, now, though, when people say Nick, and I'm with my dad, we both go, what? And, like, my mom will go, Nick, and we'll both go, what? But it used to be Nicky and then Nick, and then it was Little Nick. I was Little Nick because, you know, you got to differentiate, you know. So, but you were Tommy? How long did you go? When did you start telling people, don't call me Tommy?
Well, it kind of depends on who you talk to. Because members of my family and people who knew me when I was really little still call me Tommy.
I get that too, Mike.
Especially with a big Irish family, there's like 8 Toms.
Oh, I'm sure.
So yeah. I'm not just Tommy, I'm Tommy Hush.
Right.
And then there's Tommy McNaniman.
Right.
And there's also Tommy Campbell.
Right.
And, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, the last name was more differential. But when I was really little, they called me Tommy. But pretty much by the time I was in, you know, later grade school,
yeah,
it was just Tom.
It was around like 12 or 13 when I went, all right.
Yeah.
Stop.
It's done.
Just stop. It's weird, too, because, I mean, I prefer my full name, but it's too late now. Like, I can't suddenly start going by Nicholas.
Yeah.
But I prefer my full name. But when I was a kid, you know, I thought the name was kind of dorky, Nicholas. And on top of that, there was the kid from 8 is Enough who went by Nicholas. What was that little bastard's name who played Nicholas on 8 is Enough? With the bowl cut. What was that kid's name? I can't remember. You looking him up?
Yeah. Was it Adam Rich?
Yeah, that's it. Adam Rich.
Nicholas Bradford.
Yeah. On 8 is Enough. But I preferred Nicholas.
Yeah. I was never a Thomas.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the tank engine.
Sure. Yeah.
No, too many places.
I don't know. That. I mean, I've always preferred it. I dated a girl who used to call me Nicholas all the time. Which I liked. She was like, hey, Nicholas. And I'm like, oh. Now, when I hear my mom say Nicholas, I know I'm in trouble.
Yes.
You know? Especially if she throws the, you know, you got the old throw in the middle name in there.
A classic.
You know, Nicholas John. That would be, I'd be like, uh-oh. I did something wrong.
Can you stop hanging off the bottom of the L tracks?
Yeah, can you stop smashing bottles in the backyard? Can you stop doing that, please? Can you stop setting your G.I. Joes on fire? But, yeah, Thomas the Tank. Yeah, I guess that would be.
I mean, and with the last name, too. You know, Hush Puppy, Hush Little Baby.
Oh, sure.
Mount Hushmore.
Yeah.
Hush Hour Traffic.
Yeah.
Rosh Hashanah for all of those who celebrate.
You know, my name is Nick, and lots of things rhyme with that.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Like Slick.
Like, well, yeah. If you want to be kind. Yeah. But no, I mean, when it was like eighth grade, you used to get that stuff all the time. So. yeah. What was it? We were talking about this. We were talking about middle names before some time ago. And I want to get Vic in here a little bit later on to talk about this because he said he hates his middle name. And I can't remember what it is.
I remember.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
Eugene.
Oh, it's Eugene. What's wrong with that?
I don't know. Some people aren't super fond of it. Mine isn't even a first name. It's a last name.
What is it?
Campbell.
Campbell's a first name.
Is it?
Sure, Campbell Scott.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I just always...
There's some Campbells.
I always think of it as a surname, though.
Campbell Soup? That's a surname, right? That's a first name. Hey, I'd like some soup. What it's Campbell Soup. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. Eugene. Well, I don't think anything's wrong with Eugene.
I don't think so either.
But he was just like, there are no cool Eugenes. And I was like, Eugene O'Neill.
Eugene Levy.
Eugene Levy. Those are awesome Eugenes. Gene Hackman. Well, see, yeah. Then they, but the other thing is they go most Eugenes go by Gene.
Right.
Like Gene Hackman, one of the coolest. He doesn't go by Eugene, though. So how did we get on this? What happened? The hell's going on? All right. Listen, we're going to break here for some newses. And then we come back after the news. What scenes did you pause a lot on your DVD, on your DVR, on your VHS? What movie scenes are like, oh, I got to see that again, or I got to stop this to make sure I'm seeing everything on the scene, on the screen? You ever watched a movie and spotted something on screen and gone, whoa, 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 what was that, before scrambling for the remote, pausing the movie, and rewinding back to that specific spot? Well, we're going to talk about the most paused and rewatched scenes of all time. This is from a really fun group of scenes here from movies, and it'll get us to talking about it. We want to hear from you. What movie scenes are the most paused that you paused, rewound, and watched again, or just paused in general? 312-981-7200. All right, the news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We're live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran, who is in Prague for the season opener Hawks game. So that's at 6 a.m. 312-981-7200 is our phone number and our text number. And we're here until 5 o'clock. Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Give me a Triple Play Thursday. We kicked it off with some Glenn Campbell, and we got more coming up. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to jump into some conspiracy theories a little bit later on. But right now, we want to jump into, what are the most paused movie scenes in history? Viewers just had to see them one more time. Have you ever watched a movie and spotted something on screen? You went, whoa, what was that? You scramble for the remote control, pause the movie, rewind it to watch that specific spot again. You'll understand how certain scenes become the most paused movie scenes ever. From steamy moments that we can't help but replay to scenes where extras mess up big time, there's a lot of pause-worthy moments in Hollywood history. Some movies even give us clues as to what will happen later on, or evidence that suggests new movies or the same franchise will be coming out soon. Let's face it, we all love being detectives when it comes to our favorite movies. So what are our most favorite paused movie scenes in history? The first one they have here is Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which every guy who's listening to this program right now, and if I mention Moving in Stereo by the Cars, that's the first thing that everybody pictures. If you've ever seen, this is what they say, if you've ever seen the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, then you'll know that nearly every single person watching the video paused it during the swimming scene with Linda and Stacy. In the story, Stacy's big brother Brad is looking out for her sister and her friend Linda whilst the two splash around in the swimming pool. Phoebe Cates plays Linda Barrett, and when she climbs up the steps and out of the pool, we see her in a very small red bikini, and then she takes it off, so it's time to pause. Yeah. It's got, it's the first thing I think of every time I hear the beginning of this song. Anytime I think, okay. Hey, Brad, you always know how cute I thought you were. That's a movie I don't even like. I'm one of the only people on the planet that doesn't like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I just don't like it. I think Sean Penn's great. And Ray Walston's great as Mr. Hand, but everything else in that movie.
I finally saw the thing the whole way through, because I used to just see bits of it on cable. Yeah. And I probably liked it a little bit better than you did, but I was like, yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. And I'm that age. You know what I mean? Like, that movie came out, I was a junior in high school when it came out. And all my friends went nuts over it and saw it like 50 times, and I was like, eh. I just didn't like how they treated Jennifer Jason Leigh's character. It bothered me. I mean, even when I was 15 or 16, whenever the movie came out, I was like, what are they doing? What's going on here? Squat sends in a text. We want to hear from you. The most paused or rewound and rewatched paused scenes in movies. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Squat says, Sideways when the guy comes running out of the house naked. Really? Really? You're gonna pause that? Big, fat, naked guy running out of the house. That scene, by the way, is absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Running towards the car, Balchimata trying to get out of there. Trading Places, Jamie Lee Curtis undressing in front of Louis. I would have to agree. There are two scenes in Trading Places. Jamie Lee Curtis, who was my childhood crush, and still one of my favorite crushes of all time. That was paused a lot in my house. And then he mentions Phoebe Cates in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. 224 area code says, most slow motion movie in our family is Wizard of Oz, witch emerging from the ground in smoke, you can see the trap door. Oh, really? Really? Oh, that's kind of fun. I get this is going to be cool because we're going to find, maybe some people find scenes that we don't know about where you discover something. So you can see the trap door in the Wizard of Oz when the witch is emerging from the ground in smoke. So if you do the super slow-mo on that or go frame by that, you can see the trap door. Ruining the illusion for everybody. All right, how about this? Wild Things. I'm pretty good friends with John McNaughton, director of Henry and Wild Things. And he said he had a blast making that movie. But the threesome scene with Matt Dillon and Neve Campbell and Denise Richards, and the scene with the two of them, let's just say there was a bottle of tequila involved because they were also nervous. But they say, if you thought Phoebe Cates' little strip was steamy, we have another one. The movie Wild Things was never going to do well unless there was something in it that viewers wanted to see, like two hot girls kissing. It's like a teenager dreamt this one up. Neve Campbell and Denise Richards. The lesbian scene, everybody wanted to see it, and that's probably why Wild Things was a success. No, Wild Things is a good movie. That's why it was a success. Wild Things is actually a really good movie. You know who's great in Wild Things? Bill Murray. He is hilarious in that movie. Basic Instinct. These are not all sex-related. I want everybody to know that these are not all sex or nudity-related. But Basic Instinct is, of course, the scene that everybody freeze frames is Sharon Stone crossing her legs and uncrossing her legs. That's the one that everybody seems to be freezing on. And did you remember when Sharon Stone started, like, years after the movie came out, she claimed that she was tricked, that Paul Verhoeven tricked her, that, you know, she said that Verhoeven told her that it's only going to be, you're not going to see her waist. It's only going to be from the armrests up.
Yeah.
And so when she uncrossed her legs, you know, Verhoeven lied to her. There are two sides to this. One, why did she wait till like years later when that one scene was one of the moments that put her on the map? You know what I mean? Like, really put her on the map. And on the other side of that, I can totally see Paul Verhoeven lying to his actors.
That sounds very Verhoeven.
No, yeah, I can totally see Paul Verhoeven lying to his actors. But also, the scene, you know, that moment is about her crossing and uncrossing her legs, why would he shoot it from above her waist?
I don't know. It makes no sense.
Makes no sense. But anyway, the point is that Verhoeven might indeed have lied to her, because I know he lied to the actors in Starship Troopers by telling them they were good. I'm sure that after every take, Verhoeven was like, oh, such great acting. You were fantastic.
I feel like they might have known. I think Neil Patrick Harris
Neil Patrick Harris knew.
He knew what he was doing.
But there's a lot of people in that movie that were terrible.
Isn't Denise Richards in that?
Denise
too?
Richards is in that.
Yeah, she did.
Casper Van, whatever the hell his name is, was in that. Terrible actors in that movie. Now listen, the movie rules. Don't get me wrong. Starship Troopers is a great movie. And I love it. one of the best Starship Troopers. If you were going to make a list of movies that were the best to see at Bruinview, Starship Troopers is right near the top. That is a Bruinview movie through and through. Okay, how about this one, Cabin in the Woods? Now, see, here's the thing. This is where they pick this out. I understand. I can totally understand. By the way, I love Cabin in the Woods.
Very good.
I think Cabin in the Woods one of the best. One of the best horror movies of the past like 20 years, and I think one of the best movies of the 10s. By the way, I got to do that list this year.
Yeah.
I got to do the top movies of the 10s.
I don't know how...
Well, I already know what number one is.
Well, yeah.
It's Mad Max Fury Road. I don't even have to think about that. That's clear. I don't see anything coming out in the next 3 months that are going to be better than Mad Max Fury Road. So Mad Max Fury Road is the best movie of the 10s. There's no question about it. It's just I got to put more of them together. But anyway, Cabin in the Woods. This is another one of the moments where people are going to freeze frame or go back and do your pause. And again, if you want to jump in, phone lines are open, text lines are open, 312-981-7200. Did you ever watch Cabin in the Woods when it came out in 2012? Well, then you'll remember that moment that the scientists are deciphering what will happen to the main characters. In the background, there's a whiteboard with a list of different creatures on it that the scientists are controlling. Due to the extensive list, lots of members of the audience have paused the movie to read the list that includes mutants, zombies, clowns, and witches. Okay, so yeah, absolutely, when they're taking bets and everything on the scenario in which the people in the cabin are gonna get it, it is that board is hilarious. It's loaded with stuff. It's not just the creatures, it's how they go. It's how they die. So that's a lot of fun. But also, at the end of the movie, when you see all the compartments pop out and all the people are dying in different ways and the monsters, you got to freeze on that just to see everything that's happening, all the different creatures and all the things that are happening. Yeah.
And just kind of try to say, okay, which one, what are they trying to reference here?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah.
The guy with the saws in his head, but he's got the puzzle box. Yeah. So it's Pinhead.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Oh no. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love that movie so much. Drew Goddard, man.
He's an interesting guy.
He's a great director. And his last movie that five people saw, Bad Times at the El Royale, is really good.
You know, I did not see it.
Oh man!
It was on. I think it was on HBO.
No,
recently.
You gotta watch it, man.
Okay, because
it's
well,
great.
I was a little bit like, it's gonna be big twist, right?
No, it's great.
Okay,
it's great. Okay. And on top of that, it's one of Jeff Bridges' best performances in a long time. Like Bridges, everybody is great in it.
Okay,
it's a great cast. Everybody's great in it. Bridges is spectacular in it, and so is Helmsworth.
Hemsworth.
Is Thor. Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth.
He's fantastic in it. And he plays sort of like a Charlie Manson kind of guy.
Oh,
Yeah, no, you got to see it. It's great.
I'm guessing there's a lot of pause-worthy moments as you're like, wait, hold on.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, Cabin in the Woods is fantastic and loaded with stuff that goes by too fast. I mean, there are so many inside things and references in that movie that Cabin in the Woods is one of those movies that could be paused, you know, remote control pause worthy many, many times. Okay, we have another Wizard of Oz. Here's the writer says, I was pretty shocked when I read this, but it appears that in the classic Wizard of Oz movie, in one particular scene, something is not quite right. Since the movie was made and released back in 1939, it seems almost crazy that so many people spotted this in particular scene. But it happens that in the backgrounds of the movie, it shows the original story describes a bird. But lots of viewers have interpreted or believed that it was a munchkin that hanged himself. Now, see, now that's one of those things that I've heard a million times. And we are going to talk about conspiracy theories a little bit later. But this is one of those things. Oh, a munchkin hanged himself, and it's in the movie. And there is
false.
It's completely false. But it's a piece of the set that's hanging down. But people like have stopped it and freeze framed it. And said, yeah, no, it's one of the real life actors, one of the munchkins hanged himself and it's in the movie. So, no.
That's dark. No.
No.
Come on.
It didn't happen. Here are some texts that are coming in. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Canadian Bill says, the one I like is Large Marge. And yeah, that's pretty good. Large Marge on Pee-wee's Big Adventure. One day I turned on my daughter's tablet on her big screen and Large Marge... And I couldn't, and I hadn't told her that I paused the tape. So that's what you do. You pause when Large Marge comes on because it just happens so fast where it goes into that weird animation and then it goes back to her face. 630 area code. The final scene of Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry film, Do You Feel Lucky, Punk? That's not the final scene of the movie.
It's the beginning, isn't it?
It's close to. About a third of the way. It's a, yeah, it's close to the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, because he goes and gets the hot
dog. He's
eating
the hot dog. And...
Yeah. Do you count how many shots? You know, I feel like I would do slow-mo to count how many shots he actually does.
It is six.
He does. Oh, yeah.
I got to know. Fantastic. That guy, by the way, that actor, he's in three of the Dirty Harry movies. He's in three. He's a great character actor. Been in a bunch of stuff. Was on, had a guest appearance, a hilarious guest appearance, in fact, on Sanford and Son during the scene where, during the episode where Lamont invites the guys over to play poker and Fred is trying to stop him from playing because he knows that they're trying to rip him off. But anyway, he's in three, and he plays a pimp in Magnum Force, gets his head blown off by David Soul.
Yeah.
It's the same guy.
When is this guy going to learn that crime doesn't pay?
When is this guy going to learn not to be in a Dirty Harry movie?
You're going to get shot.
You're going to get killed, man. all right, most pause-worthy movie moments, 312-981-7200. Having some fun with this. If you want to join us, please do at 312-981-7200. We'll be back after this.
But I'm going to be where the lights are shining on me. Like a rhinestone cowboy.
Once again, reminding me of Johnny Carson. We talked about Johnny on the show yesterday morning because of his 57th anniversary taking over The Tonight Show from Jack Parr. What a great... that was a lot of fun talking about Johnny and playing all those clips yesterday. It was great. Antenna TV, 9 o'clock every weeknight. You need to watch The Tonight Show. That's Glenn Campbell wrapping up that Triple Play Thursday. You hear me, Triple Play Thursday? 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are talking about the most pause-worthy scenes in movies. And we've gotten a ton of texts coming in. Got some phone lines open if you want to jump in. Got a lot more here from this article here that we're reading. 312-981-7200. Here's Stuart on WGN. Hi, Stuart.
Morning. How you doing, Nick?
All right, buddy. What's up?
There's a scene in North by Northwest where they're in the visitor center at Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Where Eva Marie Saint shoots Cary Grant. If you look to the side, there's a young boy that puts his hands over his ears because he knows the gunshot's coming.
Right. That's kind of a legendary one, Stuart. It's so much fun. Clearly, it was like the third or fourth take. And the kid was just tired of hearing the big bang.
Yeah,
and it's really funny because I hosted a screening of North by Northwest a few months ago, and I pointed out to the audience and I pointed to the part of the screen that the kid was going to be on. I was like, make sure you look in the background at this kid who's sitting at a table. He's going to stick his fingers in his ears before the gunshot goes off.
I know. There's another movie, Nobody's Fool, where Melanie Griffith. Flash is Paul Newman.
Yeah. There you go. That's pause worthy right there.
You betcha.
Okay. All right, Stuart. Have a good day, buddy.
You too.
Take care. Yeah, North by Northwest. It's amazing. You know, it's what the thing about that is, first of all, it's hilarious. The little kid sticks his fingers in his ears before the gunshot goes off. That's kind of a legendary one. And some of these other ones that are on this, that are a part of this article and on this list, are extras who screwed up. Like, it's fun to see, like, the background extras who screwed up. But the amazing thing is that, I mean, you know what a perfectionist Hitchcock was. And to have that, you know, like to have that be the take that he used is always just like, wait a minute, how did Hitch miss this? Or maybe it was the best take that he had. Mm-hmm. But the fact that that's in a Hitchcock movie is always really funny.
That reminds me of the movie Glory, in which you can see one of the extras in, you know, Civil War America wearing a time watch.
Same thing happened in... Well, in Gladiator, there's a moment in Gladiator where you can see one of the propane powered engines chariot.
Yeah.
So they've got that. That's you can see that. There's a plane in the background of another Western that takes place. There's a like a plane goes by or something in the background. Dan in Marengo says, I have to say that Revenge of the Nerds, the panty raid scene. Okay. And then when they created Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science. Those are pause worthy. All right. How about this? Teen Wolf. I don't know, because I've only seen the movie once. You happen to be a giant Teen Wolf fan for some inexplicable reason.
I don't know if giant fan is the right verbiage, but I enjoy Teen Wolf.
At the very end of the movie, just a few moments before crowds begin to cheer and whoop, viewers notice that there is a man who stood in the background of the scene with his pants down.
Yeah.
It might be a great family movie, but how on earth that managed to get into the movie is beyond me. Was he just flying low, or is there something else that we can see? So I don't. You know that there's a guy with his pants down at the end of the movie?
Yeah, I think when I used to rent it on, we still had a VHS player at that time, and I would rent it on VHS, and I believe that was like we caught it one time, me and my younger brother, when we were watching Teen Wolf.
The guy with his pants down.
Yeah. I probably haven't watched it since I was maybe 10 or 11.
Yeah.
But I remember being like, oh, wait, I think that guy's not wearing pants.
Wow, I don't even, well, I've only seen it the one time.
Well, now, maybe I'll get you a DVD and you can relive it.
That's not going to be enough. Not going to be enough for me to want to sit through that movie again. Oh, wait, maybe I'll watch it all again just to see a guy with his pants down.
Pants on the ground.
Pants on the ground. Well, now, if it was the guy singing Pants on the Ground, that's a different story. Little Mermaid, this is a great one because it's also on the movie poster. Everybody loves a good Disney movie, but there is a coral shaped like a penis. The entire package in the King Titan's Golden Castle. And lastly, of course, there is the priest who gets a little too excited at the wedding. So those are highly inappropriate moments that people like to freeze and rewind. Priest who gets a little too excited at the wedding, the coral that's shaped like a penis, and the King Titan's Golden Castle. The Golden Castle is on the poster for the movie, and it looks like a penis.
Yeah, that's kind of famous for Disney in the 90s, late 80s and 90s, during that Renaissance period. I guess the animators had a pretty dirty sense of humor because people talk about those all the time.
Fight Club. There are a few scenes in Fight Club that are a little pornographic in their imagery. It was only eagle-eye viewers could also spot Brad Pitt on the screen in several scenes before you meet his character. Yeah, that's pretty cool. You can freeze frame that. That's pretty cool. You know what else I freeze framed was the in The Exorcist when they flash the death mask.
I was going to ask you how you feel about that, because is that just in the 2000 re-release?
Well, wait, no. There one time it's in the original director's cut,
right?
And not the director's cut, the original theatrical version. It's just the one time she's going, she's moving her head around, and all of a sudden, boom! There's a flash of the death mask, is what they call it.
Yeah.
But in the 2000 re-release, they put it all over the place. Like they put it on the stove in one scene. It's in the background. It's stupid.
I know. I feel bad because I prefer that version.
The 2000 version?
Yes. Only because it's got two scenes I really like, which is they have the conversation between Karis and...
That is a great scene. And that awesome I agree with you, and it should have been in the movie.
It works both ways,
but
honestly.
The spider walk scene is ridiculous.
I love the spider walk.
No, it happens. First of all, it's ridiculous. Second of all, it happens way too early in the movie. She's not that possessed to do that. And it screws up how gradually she becomes screwed up. How gradually... She's not. You're not gonna like. At that point in the movie, she's barely possessed. Like it's the evidence is not really big yet. But to have her go like a spider crawling down the stairs that early in the movie, no. And I think it also looks ridiculous.
I like it.
I can't. No, that's.
I am firmly pro spider walk.
Oh no, 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 no. And Exorcist is one of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's a perfect movie. But that scene where they're having the discussion about why her on the stairs is great. It's great. Okay, we got a break, and we got more coming up right after this.
Only love can break your heart. Try to be sure right from the start. Yes, only love can break your heart.
Hey, welcome back. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline studio above downtown Chicago. We're going to talk about conspiracy theories a little bit later on. Our phone number for text and Triple Play Thursday is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Wayne, wanting to hear little Neil Young.
There you go. All right. Hey, we are talking about pause-worthy movie scenes and movie moments where you get that remote and you pause it. Look at the screen, maybe rewind it and all that stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The next one they talk about here is Total Recall. And they say it's the three-breasted lady. That's where you should hit your pause button. I personally like to pause Total Recall when anybody is on Mars going and their eyes are bugging out. I like to pause that. Because Rob Bottin's effects are so fantastic in that movie. But yeah, they say the three-breasted woman is worth a pause. How about Psycho? They mentioned Psycho, the final shot. Not the final shot, because the final shot is the car being pulled out of the water. But the shot where Anthony Perkins is looking directly into the camera. I won't even swap that fly, that whole thing. But as the scene is fading out, the mother's skeleton face appears on his face. And they kind of meld together. It's pretty cool to freeze frame while, you know, while when you can finally kind of see it happens fast. It's a slow, it cuts away before like the full thing happens. And then they cut to the car being dragged out of the water.
I like to go frame by frame on the shower scene just to.
Oh, well,
because it's just so amazing how much your mind fills in the blanks.
Now, you've seen the documentary that's all about about that scene.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And it really breaks it down for you. And this is how much of a master Hitchcock was.
It's an 85-minute movie about one scene. So, Doc, our good friend Doc, says, Nick, this particular movie, I think more people bought it for the pause scene than the actual movie. It was a scene with the ghost boy standing behind the curtains. And legend has it that this boy had been murdered in the house where the filming took place, except for the fact that it was filmed on a set. On a movie lot, and I bet Nick knows the full true story about the ghost boy behind the curtains in Three Men and a Baby. Yeah, there was this whole thing about there was a curse in this place where they were shooting Three Men and a Baby, and at one point you can see the ghost of the child behind the curtains. These are kind of like these sheer curtains by a window, and in the background of one scene you can kind of see the shadow, and it kind of people went kind of nuts. Over it because they were like, there's the ghost of this kid and you can see, the shadow of the ghost of the kid. And it became like, again, another urban legend. And we're going to be talking a little bit later on. We're going to be talking about conspiracy theories as well, throwing those things around. But this is one of those urban legends where everybody was like, but what it turned out to be was in the movie, Ted Danson plays an actor. And the shadow that you see by the curtain is a cardboard cutout, like a lobby that you would put in the lobby of a video store or the lobby of a movie. It was a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson. But they cut the scenes where that cardboard cutout was seen because they'd filmed scenes where they acknowledged that there had been this, they established that there had been this cardboard cutout of Ted Danson's character, but they cut all those scenes out. So in the one scene that everybody's talking about, in the background behind that curtain is the shadow of this cardboard cutout of Ted Danson. But everybody was, they made up this whole story about, oh, it's the ghost of a boy who killed himself. No, it's a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson. But people freezed it like crazy. Joliet Mike says, here's a pause moment. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, when he's pulling out the chain to lock up his bike at Chuck's bike shop, you can see the chain being fed into the container from the bottom. I don't want to ruin that sight gag. I don't want to have that sight gag ruined where he pulls out like a 45,000-foot chain. 212-219 area code says Dirty Dancing the last 10 minutes. So they just freeze it and rewind it?
I think they followed up here with, you can see Patrick Swayze take off his jacket twice.
Oh!
So it's a continuity error.
Oh, a continuity error. Those are always fun. There's a continuity error in Substitute Teacher. The Substitute Teacher, Key and Peele Substitute Teacher. When he's saying, D-nice, is there a D-nice here? She raises, in one shot from the front, she raises her left hand, but from behind, she's got her right hand up. I've seen that sketch a couple times.
Once or twice.
Once or twice. Balake. It's still one of the funniest things that's ever been committed to film. You ain't even old enough to get in the damn club. You about as Spanish as Ryan Seacrest with your fraggle ass rock hair. Here's Mo on WGN. Hi, Mo.
Hey, Nick, man, you the coolest dude.
Thanks,
I'm
man.
Down here in Hiawatha, Kansas, and I work in the morning, so I get up early enough to drink a beer buzz and then brush my teeth, just some Listerine, and go back at 9 o'clock at the restaurant. But anyway, I was telling so I know how to cover it up real good because I'm like you. I'm old school. I'm 60 years old.
Yeah.
But, you know, I ride a bike and I look real good for my age.
All right.
But anyway, check this out, Nick. When Major League, when Tom Berenger pointed to the stands and he bunted the ball, and then when Western Sight came around, and then Bob Uecker up in there said, "The Indians win it. Oh, my God. The Indians win it." And that bitch, who was a bitch to them, talking about, "You lucky I can even afford to pay your salary." And the look on her face is why I wanted to pause.
Yeah.
When Bob Uecker said, "The Indians win it. Oh, my God."
Yeah.
And everybody went crazy in Cleveland.
Yeah. There you go. So pause it on that. That's cool, man. That's Major cool. League. All right, Mo. Thanks, buddy.
Nick, it's nice talking to you, bro.
All right, man. Take care. I like Mo.
Mo's a good dude.
219 area code says, also in Wizard of Oz, in a scene where they get back on the yellow brick road singing, you can see that Toto is clearly thrown off from the side of the screen onto the road behind them to catch up with them. that's hilarious. There's also I don't know why I keep going back to Sanford and Son. This is the second Sanford and Son reference I've made. There's a scene. My favorite Sanford and Son episode of all time is the one where Lamont brings home, he had bought two coffins, and Fred's like not happy because Fred's very superstitious, and so Lamont brings home these coffins to resell, and Fred won't sleep in the house with the coffins. He goes and sleeps out on the truck. So the coffins are in the living room. You're like, right, you know, when you first walk into Fred's house, there's the two coffins are there. And Lamont's like, "Don't be ridiculous about sleeping out on the truck." But then Lamont starts to freak out because the lights go out and a cat starts howling. And at one point, a cat like runs across the set, but you can totally see that somebody just throws the cat across the set. You can just see cat comes flying in from the side of the set. When I was in junior high, 708 area code says, a friend's father had one of the first VHS players. I was at a friend's house with my classmate's brother. My classmate, a girl, showed me the shower scene in Stripes and paused it. I found out years later she was a lesbian. Yeah, I wish I was a loofah. That's John Larroquette's line. Oh, I wish I was a loofah. Hey, Nick, please don't be cross with me sending this text, but my family and friends paused at the hospital scene in The Fugitive because I was an extra on the payphone. Oh, that's, yeah, of course.
No need. We're not going to be cross.
I don't apologize for that.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Mo Green getting shot in the eye on the massage table and the horse head being uncovered. Somebody likes to pause things in The Godfather. As Dick Smith did that effect. Mo Green getting shot in the eye. In Alien, when Tom Skerritt's character is surprised by the alien, it's pause-worthy to see a man in a cheap alien outfit.
I will say, I still get freaked out by that movie, but when he just throws it down, I'm like, ah!
Yeah.
That's kind of silly.
Yeah. By the way, Dirty Harry says that line twice. Yeah, he does say it at the end to the Scorpio killer. 847 area code says, in the VHS days, I watched and rewatched The Head Exploding in Scanners. Me too. Now, you know how they did that, right?
No, I've honestly been curious for a long time.
They put a shotgun behind the prosthetic. they blew the head up with a shotgun.
I can see Cronenberg just like, yeah,
just put the shotgun behind it. But they did that in Maniac too. You know the scene,
yeah, when he's on top of the car.
Yeah,
right?
They actually had no permit,
mm-hmm.
no permit to shoot in the Hollywood Hills where it takes place. And so they were like, just jump up on the car with a real shotgun and a real round and blow the thing apart. So they did it, and then they all got in their cars and took off.
because they had no permit. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're blowing shotguns off. So they got that in one take. Lustig set up, I think, 3 cameras or 2 cameras or something to make sure they got it. Jumped up on the car with a shotgun, boom. And it's Savini who does it. It's Savini who shoots the...
Yeah, that's the 70s and 80s for you.
Yeah.
Just shoot it.
Back to the Future 3 in the end when Christopher Lloyd's kid points to his crotch. That is hilarious. At the end of Back to the Future, that kid is mugging. You know, it's when they come back and he's now with Mary Steenburgen and they have kids and they're on like the, you know, they're on like the powered up time machine train. At the end of Back to the Future 3, at the very end, and this kid is mugging. You can just, and he's just like, he's looking at the camera, making faces, and he points to his crotch. I'm sure that Zemeckis watched it back. There's another guy who is a total perfectionist. Zemeckis. I'm sure he watched it back. I'm going to smack that kid silly next time I see him. 847 area code said, the most rewatch event in television history is not in a movie, but Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl losing her top, the wardrobe malfunction. Yeah, it's the most TiVo'd moment, at least up until that moment. And that was in the sort of the infancy of TiVo.
Yeah, it was like, that was the 2004?
Yeah, February of 2004.
Yeah, nuts.
Yeah.
And then American Dad premiered afterward.
No. Did it?
Yep.
Oh, it did, yeah, because I was thinking Family Guy, that premiered in 99 after the Super Bowl. Okay. All right. Let's take a break here, and we'll come back with more. I got a whole much more here on this article that they wrote about pause worthy movie scenes and moments that make you hit that remote. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Cinnamon Girl, Neil Young, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, maybe Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. Nice to hear George in the middle of the morning like that. George Cards is my good friend who runs the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn.
Loves a good pork chop.
They have great pork chops there. All the food is great there. It's the best restaurant on the planet. Go to the Gale Street Inn. I love those guys. George is a great guy and a good friend. Fantastic food. Okay. Hey, welcome back. We are talking about pause-worthy movie scenes where you grab that remote and you pause it and go, what was that? Wolf of Wall Street is basically the Margot Robbie, anytime Margot Robbie is in the scene. Yeah, so.
Well, especially when it's the scene where she starts getting mad at him, kind of does the Basic Instinct thing.
Right. Yep. How about this? The Lion King. Now, did you know about this? Disney might have outdone themselves. They have 2 movies on this list already. Did you ever spot a little anything a little odd in the classic Lion King? You know, the rock where baby Simba gets held up to all of Africa? Well, on the same rock at nighttime, Simba's mother and father are watching the stars, and the dust and the falling stars in the air definitely spell out the word sex.
Yeah, that's up to interpretation.
It says there's no denying it. Apparently, a statement says that it spells the letters SFX. Why would it spell that anyway?
I don't know.
So they say it spells out the word sex.
Did they do that in the reboot? Not that.
Did Favreau throw that in there just for?
No, he just threw in a big picture of Vince Vaughn and Swingers, and his face was on the moon.
Boogie Nights. Oh, come on, really? The final scene. People were freeze framing on the prosthetic penis. That's what they. That's what they said when it came out on video. Remotes paused all over the place when Mark Wahlberg takes down his underwear. Okay. How about Tron? Anytime I mention Tron, I've ever told you this, I directed a play called Being at Choice, which was about 6 people in like an est group with a counselor. And it's about these 6 people who each have their own issue, and the play takes place in one room during one of these encounters, and they all go through their issues. And the instructor or the counselor
was in the version that I directed was played by my friend Scott Oaken. So we have a scene in it's a series of blackouts. The play was a series of blackouts. So the lights come up on this particular scene, and everybody's writing like they were given an assignment. And so each person is in a corner or off to their side, and they're thinking. It's a very quiet scene. Nothing is happening except for the six regular characters writing, and Scott playing the counselor, who's in the middle. He's sitting in a chair in the middle of the stage, and he's sleeping. He's like he's fallen asleep while waiting for these people to finish their writing assignment, and so he's sleeping. And so, I told Scott like when he wakes up because he's gonna like his arm is gonna fall off the side of the chair and like startle him and wake him up. I said, say something, just say anything you want when you wake up. Whatever, just throw in, you can change it up. Just because I would always let people like improvise during a show and give them a moment or two to just do whatever the hell they wanted to do on stage to see if they can get a laugh. So about four or five performances in, he's asleep and I'm in the audience watching. He's asleep and again, his arm slips and you know how you startle yourself awake. His arm slips, he goes, Tron! And so I was like, I just laughed so hard. I was like, after the show, I just came and said, no, that's a keeper. You're going to say Tron every performance. So he did. Every time he'd wake up, Tron. So I'm picturing inside the character's head, he's dreaming about like Jeff Bridges.
On the light
cycle. On the light cycle, yeah. Tron! So Tron, the actor Jeff Bridges, who plays Kevin Flynn / Clue in the movie, can be spotted in one scene with Pac-Man. Yes, it's true. Pac-Man is there eating all the yellow dots just in the background of the screen that Jeff Bridges is staring into. Now, is that right?
I don't know. The only reason I paused Tron is so that I can take out the disc and throw it away.
Not a fan of Tron, huh?
No, I hate that, and I hate its stupid, unnecessary sequel.
Well, the sequel's terrible. I'm not crazy about the first one, but there are things in the first one that I you know, like when it first came out, because you don't understand. You weren't alive when the first one came out, and those effects were groundbreaking.
I accept that.
Yeah.
You know, it is not a good movie.
No, it's not. It's not, but the effects are really cool. They're not cool now because they're 1982 effects that look completely ridiculous now. But I'm telling you, in 1982, when that movie came out, it was pretty revolutionary in terms of computer effects. But it's not a good movie.
No.
But there's cool. Like that light cycle thing is awesome. That scene is great. It's a great scene. Mm-hmm. And the visuals are really, really cool, but it is a stupid movie. There's no question about it. But, you know, at the time, like I'm telling you, you got to trust me on this. At the time, there was nothing like it. There was nothing like it. So it got a pass just on base. I mean, I remember Siskel and Ebert gave it 4 stars. They both went completely nuts over it because of the effects. They didn't bother to review the story or the acting or anything. Cindy Morgan's in it. There's another reason to like it. Lacey Underall, man. Gotta love Cindy Morgan. She's from Chicago, man.
True, true.
She's awesome. Star Wars, A New Hope. So that's the original.
Yes.
The entire collection of Star Wars movies has many moments that we just have to pause and replay for ourselves. But when somebody or other spotted this in the 1977 movie, we enjoyed it a little too much. Oh, yeah, it's the Stormtrooper bumping his head, right?
Yeah, which in later releases, they added the sound effect, like a bonk to it.
The Stormtrooper, yeah, that's what it is. Stormtrooper smashing his head on the
door. It's super funny.
No, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. They added this, like Lucas went in and added a bonk.
Yeah,
did he add
it's
ouch?
It's no, just a little bonk. It's very, very subtle.
Yeah,
if you're listening close, it's in the mix. You can hear it, and it also sets up the whole theory that stormtroopers
have bad eyesight. Oh, bad eyesight because they can't.
They pay off later in the prequel series, Star Wars Episode II, where. You've got Jango Fett, the progenitor of all the stormtroopers, is getting into a ship, and he also hits his head.
Wow.
So they realize the joke, and they pay it off later.
I think
later.
They should have added Sven Gulli's sound effect. Ow, ow, ow! They should have added that.
Well, if he ever shows it.
That's my favorite sound effect that Sven Gulli uses. I tell every time I talk to Rich, and every time they use it, you know, on the show, ow, 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 that's my favorite. And he's got so many great sound effects, and they use him so great on the show. But the ow, ow, ow is my favorite. Always has been. But they should have added that. Stormtrooper hits his head. Ow, ow, ow. That would have been good. Phantom Menace. Oh, that's E.T. It's during the it's during the Galactic Senate scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's with all the different aliens and all the stuff in their little floating things. there's a bunch of ETs in the background. Yeah, all right. I buy that. George Lucas, Steven Spielberg are buddies. Okay. All right, let's break here. We got the news coming up, and we got a lot more here. What movie scenes are pause-worthy? Which ones do you hit the remote, rewind, or stop, or pause? 312-981-7200. More coming up after the news, which is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday.
One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And we're talking about grabbing that remote and what are some great pause-worthy scenes in movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got some texts coming in. We'll get to this. Next one here is Star Wars Phantom Menace. We did that one already.
Yeah, the
Force Awakens. Now, here's the Force Awakens. Now, at the very end of the movie, Star Wars Force Awakens, we see Rey hand over the lightsaber she used throughout the whole movie that used to belong to Luke Skywalker. As Rey approaches Luke Skywalker, there's a shot in the scene where Luke stands gravely. He stood by a piece of rock that looks like it could be a gravestone. Many fans have paused this movie time and time again, trying to work out why Luke Skywalker is standing there by himself on the rock. If anything, what does that mean? What's that supposed to mean?
So I think what it was is that people thought that there, you know, since it was a headstone, that he was there with somebody. Maybe there was.
Oh, and they died, and
they died, and they wanted to know if they were bringing up maybe some characters from the expanded universe that existed before Disney took over and stuff and scrubbed it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Nerd stuff.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Ron Liebman is on Friends right now. Kaz. One and only. Okay, let's see. Here's Roger on WGN. Hi, Roger.
Hey, Nick. This is Roger from Manitoba. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Hey, you were born, what, 65?
Yes.
I was born in 62, mm-hmm. So both of us can identify with this. This is a young man's dream. It's a pause-worthy, especially when it came out on video. The beach scene, Bo Derek in 10.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know when that was out, but we were young men.
I was 15. So yeah. I was 15. I was 15 when 10 came out. Yeah, a lot of pause-worthy scenes in that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. That movie was like, oh. Yeah. You know, Bo Derek was at her prime at the time. I guess that's what broke her out, eh?
Oh, yeah, that's the big one. All right, Roger, thanks, man.
Okay, Nick,
take care.
Bye.
See you. Yeah, Bo Derek, man. I was 15. That's a pretty special age to be when Bo Derek breaks. So, 15 years old, man. You all right, Tom? What the hell's going on?
I'm sorry. Great newsman Vic Vaughn decided to chime into me that Bo Derek's ass looks like the planes compared to Jessica Biel.
Wow. Okay.
Strong words.
Yeah.
Strong words.
All right. Bo Derek, man. By the way, 10 is probably my favorite Blake Edwards movie. I think 10 is a masterpiece. I think it's an incredible movie. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, like Bo Derek is in it and all that other stuff. It's, you know, when I turned 40 and as I, you know, hit the middle age area there when I was in my 40s, I watched 10 again and I loved it. I mean, I've always really loved it. But it's probably the best movie ever made about turning 40. Profoundly good. And, you know, so it's other movies that I love about middle age. Sideways is another one that I identified with. As I saw it, I was on the verge of turning 40 when Sideways came out, and it spoke to me. It was one of those movies that really spoke to me. But 10 is the best movie ever made about being about a guy hitting middle age. It's without question the best movie ever made about that on a beautiful, really significant level. It's a great movie. Okay, we got some pause-worthy stuff here. 301 area code says there's a scene in the 1951 Christmas Carol where Scrooge is looking in a mirror and you can see the cameraman sitting on the bed behind him. That's always fun. 815 area code, the shower scene in Porky's when the old teacher grabs the kid's junk that he put through the hole in the wall. Really? You're gonna freeze frame that? 816 area code, I would buy Looking for Mr. Goodbar just to freeze frame the shots of Diane Keaton. Okay. Here's one that they talk about in the article. Who framed Roger Rabbit? It's known that Roger Rabbit is probably the most sexualized cartoon character to ever exist, but can you believe that everyone paused their screens in the scene where she goes commando? Not sure what people were looking at particularly, but this scene had Jessica Rabbit dancing an awful lot. If you pause this, she is just a cartoon, but if you pause it, that's it. You can see her sexualized and commando. I've never done that. I've seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I don't know how many times I've seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I've lost count of how many times I've seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but I've never paused it for anything. But there's a lot of reasons to pause Roger Rabbit just to catch all the stuff in the background. Now, I don't want to freeze frame Roger Rabbit or that kind of stuff just to see Jessica Rabbit like being sexualized. One of the reasons why you might want to freeze frame Roger Rabbit is because there are so many characters in it. There are so many like incredible animated characters. At the end of the movie, when they discover that the deed to Toontown is indeed that blank piece of paper with the disappearing ink comes back, and they realize that Toontown is back in control of the Toons, which, by the way, I cry every time I see it. Like at the end of that movie, when they all celebrate that Toontown is theirs again, I cry. There are so many unbelievably memorable cartoon characters gathered right there at that moment. That's a freeze frame moment to just point out the characters. There's Droopy. There's this guy. There's that guy. You know.
Yeah, Mickey and Minnie are in it, right?
Yeah. Oh, listen.
The whole
scene where Hoskins is pushed out of that building, and it's Mickey and Bugs together with their parachutes. There's never a movie like that could never be made again. The fact that all of those licensings and all of those companies agreed and got together, that's one of the reasons why that movie is, I mean, there's a million reasons why that movie is so special. I mean, it's one of the greatest movies ever made. But like you could never be Mickey and Bugs working together. Donald and Daffy having the piano duel. In the club? Come on, man. With Betty Boop as the waitress?
It's great stuff.
It's so great. They mentioned Three Men and a Baby here, too, with the ghost of the boy, which turned out to be a cardboard cutout. Let's see. Here's Steve from Galesburg. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned this. In used cars, at the beginning of the film, Cheryl Rixon, she was a Penthouse playmate, when they're opening the hood up,
yeah.
I'm going back to when we were teenagers,
yeah.
And it rips her dress off.
Right. Well, that's not the beginning of the movie. That's about a third of the way into the movie.
Well, me and my buddies, we always had to repeat that.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, she's caught on the hood. Oh, my God, she's caught on the hood ornament. And well, that's a worthy one right there. Absolutely.
And plus, Jeff said it's a red dress.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a red car, not a red dress.
A red car. Yeah.
That's right. All right, Steve. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah. Used cars, man. Talking Zemeckis again, right there. God, used cars. Funniest movie ever made, in my opinion. Funniest movie of all time. I love that movie. Let's see. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. You were talking about Bo Derek, and I go back to Tommy Boy.
Mm-hmm.
When she comes out of the pool, and is that for me, Dad?
No, son.
No, son, that's for me.
That's for me. Yeah, I agree. And she looked fantastic in that movie.
Oh,
at
my age?
Yeah,
I'm
and that was
now.
That was
heart attack material.
That was 15 years after 10. She looked as good as she did in 10, 15
Absolutely.
Years afterwards. All right, thanks. Thanks, Robert.
Have a great morning, Nick.
Take care, buddy. Tommy Boy. Another one of those movies that I could watch on an endless loop.
I mean, fat guy in a little coat.
Because he used to do that for real. Because Spade and Spade, could you imagine this? Spade, Farley, and Sandler shared an office when they were working on SNL. Can you imagine that office?
It's probably a pigsty.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And there are stories of Farley. They were on like the, I guess 17th or 18th floor of Rockefeller Center, and he would open up the window and stick his butt out and crap out the window.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Farley would. They would dare Farley to do anything, and he would do anything.
Ah, jeez.
Farley was nuts, man. He was nuts. He would do anything for a laugh.
That's
anything.
True.
But, I mean, they would talk about how they would share this thing. And you get, you know, when you're working on SNL, you get loopy. Let me just say this right now. We're in a Thursday morning. They're not sleeping right now. If you were to go to Rockefeller Center right now and go up to the offices of SNL, everyone smells bad. Everyone hasn't slept like a day and a half. They're still trying to finish writing sketches right now. And they're all in the offices, you know. The star of Fleabag is in the hotel. She's asleep right now. But all the writers and a lot of the creative people who are there, the people who are building sets, it's all on right now. It's all on. It's 4:45 in New York right now. And they're like getting ready for the day because they've been up all night. But in times when they would get bleary-eyed and they couldn't come up with any ideas and their sketches were going nowhere, Farley would take David Spade's coat. Like, and it was a real thing, and he would put it on and go, fat guy in a little coat. So they put it in Tommy Boy. But that's a real thing he would do when things got crazy, you know, like they hadn't slept in days, so he would just try to cheer everybody up. Fat guy in a little coat.
Classic.
It's such a funny movie. You know, a lot of people go to college for 7 years. Yeah, they're called doctors. oh my God, I can hear you getting fatter. Tommy Boy, man. So good. Black Sheep, not so much. Not so much. A couple of laughs in Black Sheep, but overall, they tried to repeat, you know, the formula. Didn't work. Tommy Boy, though, it's great. You know who's great in Tommy Boy as well? Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe is fantastic in Tommy Boy.
I love when they go cow tipping.
Cow tipping. Yeah. Did you eat a lot of paint chips when you were growing up? Why? Because that's when he's hosing them down. She's a maniac, maniac. And Aykroyd's in it. So, anyway. All right. We got a break here. We've got more coming up. We've got the weather coming up. And then we got more pause-worthy movies. We'll wrap that up. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We're live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. on a Thursday morning. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran, who is in Prague for the big Blackhawks game. So that's at 6 a.m. if you want to jump in there. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from John in L.A. A little clash.
Yes. All right, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking about some movies that are worthy of freeze framing and pausing and watching again. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in here. If you have a pausable movie moment, like for instance, how about The Rescuers? Which is an animated movie from 1977. In the movie The Rescuers, Disney managed to sneak in a couple of very naughty and noteworthy shots of naked women getting changed in her room, of a naked woman getting changed in her room. And again, this was back in those days when they were, you know, trying to amuse themselves in the animation department. Indiana Jones, the Raiders of the Lost Ark. By the way, I refuse to call it Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. The movie's called Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's called Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I understand that.
You know, just because the other ones have Indiana Jones in the title, Raiders of the Lost Ark didn't. It's called Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well, they retcon things. They did the same thing with Star Wars.
Yeah. This is a great one. This is a great one. I love watching the Indiana Jones movies as a kid. The character of Renee Belloc is a notorious one in the Indiana Jones movies, in the first Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. The character is played by Paul Freeman. Paul Freeman is a great actor and even greater for this moment. In one scene, he continues to deliver his line even while a fly crawls into his mouth. We all thought it was gross, but Paul kept going. Now, hold on a second. Let me just clear this up a little bit. Because that is a famous moment in Raiders of the Lost Ark, is when Belloc is talking and there's a fly on his mouth and it appears that the fly goes into his mouth and he eats the fly and he continues. Spielberg did that on purpose. He took a few frames out so it appeared that the fly flies away. In real life, the fly flew away. It did not go into his mouth. Paul Freeman did not eat the fly. And so this person who wrote this article should have done a little more research because, in fact, it was a joke that Spielberg played. Spielberg had the editor cut out a few frames so it appeared that the fly actually went into Paul Freeman's mouth and he ate it. So it didn't happen. So, all right, let's see. We got Don here on WGN. Hi, Don.
Hey.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, in the movie The Fifth Element, which is a wonderful Luc Besson movie, when Mila Jovovich jumps off the building and you can see all of the vehicles moving below her as she's jumping into them, just the amazing depth and all of the movement that's going on. Plus, also, there was a scene where she was walking along the building, and there's vehicles flying by, and you can see people on the other building standing there watching her, walking around. I mean, just the amount of imagery that goes on and the complexity. And it doesn't even look like special effects. It looks very real. I think that's I had to pause a lot of that just to see all of the stuff that was going on.
Yeah, there's a lot
in all of those scenes.
There's a lot of details in the special effects, and as you're saying, a lot of great detail in the special effects in that movie.
Yeah, it was a remarkable movie. I mean, I'm surprised it wasn't really more popular than it was.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like Luc Besson never gets reviewed very well, but I always love his movies.
Yeah, we're going to agree to disagree, Don. I can't stand Luc Besson. And I hate the Fifth Element. But no, you're right about the details with which and how complicated all that stuff was in the background. Really good stuff. All right, Don, thanks.
All right, thanks.
Take
for
care.
Your time.
Yeah, I can't stand the Fifth Element. Luc Besson. Guy's never made a good movie. Ever. Ever. Fifth Element.
Man, wasn't The Professional amazing?
No.
God, it's so good.
No, it wasn't.
Gary Oldman gives the performance of his career.
Embarrassing. He's embarrassing in The Fifth Element, too. And The Fifth Element contains the most annoying performance by any human being in the history of cinema, which is Chris Tucker. It's the most annoying performance in the history of cinema. I hate that movie. I hate all his movies. God. Let's see. Any episode of The Simpsons, especially when you see what the cashier scans Maggie. Oh yeah, that's always fun. What pops up when they scan Maggie at the grocery store?
I heard that it's whatever the cost of having a child is in the given year.
That's what I heard too. Well, there's a lot of Easter eggs with the Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we'd probably do a 10-hour show on over the years and how many Easter eggs and crazy little jokes and inside stuff that they've thrown into The Simpsons over the years. Yeah,
you liked Rashomon. No, that's not how I remember it.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great joke. Here's Chuck on WGN. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Hey.
Good morning.
Morning.
The moment I remember is in Spaceballs where the nurse walks across the screen when he was giving Daphne Zuniga back her old nose.
Okay.
You remember that part?
No, I don't remember it.
Oh, all right. Well, there's a part. Yeah, he was gonna. He captured Daphne Zuniga, and he was gonna. Her punishment was. He was holding her for ransom, and sorry, I'm kind of driving at the moment, but you're on speakerphone, so don't worry about that
all right.
part. But he was going to give her back her old nose unless the father gave up the air supply or whatever it was. And the nurse that was assisting him, they all walked across, or they all watched her walking across to the doctor. And The one guy goes, I bet she gave great helmet. And that's the line I remember from that part, but that was a part to slow down.
Ah, okay. All right, Chuck, thanks.
Yeah.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Yeah. That's another movie I don't like that everybody likes, Spaceballs. Don't think it's funny. Best part of that movie the best part of the movie are the continuing jokes about marketing. That's the funniest stuff in the movie, consistently. And they're combing the desert. That's funny. And the I think the cleverest scene in that movie, the one consistently funny scene in that movie, the only really consistently funny scene in that movie, is where they take the videotape of Spaceballs and they put it in the video machine and they're rewinding through the movie or fast-forwarding through the movie, and then they actually get to the part where they are in the movie. That's my favorite part of the entire film. That's the best part of the entire movie. All right, how about this? Burn after reading. Oh, yeah, I like to freeze frame burn after reading. I don't even know what's going on here. Burn after reading is one movie that made an awful lot of people reach for their remotes to stop the movie, rewind it, and play back certain scenes. Take, for instance, when Brad Pitt's character is shot when he's in the closet. It happens so fast, you wonder if they actually hit him or not. Wow, they include Burn After Reading, but 8 people saw that movie.
I love Burn After Reading.
It's okay.
I think it's hilarious.
It's okay. I think Brad Pitt's great in it. I thought the movie was all right. I didn't think it was great. And then Pulp Fiction. This is the last one. Yeah, Bruce Willis is one of the hottest men in Hollywood. It comes as no surprise that fans of Pulp Fiction were hitting the pause button when they realized that you could see his genitals if you paused the shower scene at the right moment. Okay. And Finding Nemo, there are characters from other movies, from other Pixar movies in there. They do that a lot in the Pixar movies. They throw in like characters from other movies. WALL-E is loaded with stuff like that. WALL-E's got a bunch of sort of background things. So there you go. Those are some pause-worthy movie moments. Thanks for jumping in on those. I'll have to rent Burn After Reading to see if they actually did shoot Brad Pitt. So, all right. Let's take a break. We got the news coming up right after this.
To meet a minister, the leader never leaves a store ajar. Swings the whip from the bowl of war.
Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 o'clock on this Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. You mean Triple Play Thursday? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, coming up after this show at 5 o'clock, it's the opening bell with Steve Grzanich and Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran, who is in Prague for the Hawks game. And the Steve Cochran show with Justin Kaufman sitting in will start at 6. Hey, just to let you know what's coming up on the show tomorrow morning. It's Friday, so all of our regular Friday features will happen. But we're also going to talk with our good friend Herb Weisbaum. He's the consumer man. And any consumer problems or concerns that you have, he'll answer any and all of your questions. We'll talk about the latest in consumer news and getting past the scammers and all that cool stuff. He's a great guy, and he joins us for his monthly visit. That'll happen. And then a little bit after that, Jack Crosby is going to join us. He's CBS Sports, and he covers professional wrestling for CBS Sports. And we're going to talk a lot of professional wrestling tomorrow. I'm a big pro wrestling fan. If you're regular listeners to this show, you know that I've been watching wrestling for many, 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 many years. And the reason we're bringing it up is because SmackDown makes its big premiere tomorrow night on Fox. And this is the first time that professional wrestling has been back on regular network channels or network stations and in years. It's always been on the cable networks. But regular broadcast networks are first time in a long time. So SmackDown is making its big debut on tomorrow night. And The Rock is coming back. There's going to be all kinds of surprises and all kinds of really cool stuff. They did the same thing on Raw. They had a big celebration on Raw on Monday night because it was the season premiere. And they brought Jerry the King Lawler back, and they brought back some of the older wrestlers and stuff. Like Hulk Hogan showed up, Ric Flair and all that stuff. And I think Hogan and Flair are actually going to be on SmackDown this Friday. So tomorrow night, SmackDown's going to be on, so we're going to have Jack Crosby on to talk about that. Plus, we're going to talk about some of the best SmackDown moments of all time and some of the greatest professional wrestlers ever. And we've got all of our regular Friday features coming up tomorrow. That's Vic's Picks. We've been going through and we've been listening to Vic and talking to Vic about getting his musical knowledge up to speed. And he decided that he was going to do that and he's almost done listening to every single album on the top 100 albums of all time list, according to Rolling Stone. And we'll talk with him about the two latest albums that he's been listening to. And we'll do that with Vic's Picks. And then we've also got You Big Dummy. That's when we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who the biggest dummy is. And then there's Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7, as you should, because it's the best. Listen to this radio station 24/7. And when anybody says something that you can pull out of context, makes you giggle, that sounds a little dirty, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Also, Nick D Show Spies. Nick D Show Spies is when you, again, listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody mentions me or any in the show or any capacity, we want to know about it, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And, of course, Fly Jams Friday, where we get funky and play some R&B and some funky music to get your weekend started off on a funky note. So Herb Weisbaum, Jack Crosby from CBS Sports, and we'll talk about the upcoming premiere of SmackDown on Fox. 312-981-7200. There you go. And we're going to be talking about some of the most popular conspiracy theories. And if you want to jump in here, every state has its own urban legends. Many have controversial conspiracy theories. What are some of your favorite conspiracy theories?
Ooh. Ooh.
And yeah, you want to jump in here for Talkin' Texas, 312-981-7200. 807 area code says, do you think Prague is ready for gritty? Oh, man. I want to see him get through customs. That's what I want to see. Yeah, Gritty going to be running around in Prague. You got to love that. Maybe, you think he and Tommy Hawk are going to hang out? They'll go out on the night on the town in Prague?
Oh, yeah. I think it'll be not unlike, you know, probably like in Bruges style.
Yeah.
Just going around this fairy tale medieval town.
Yeah, just them hanging out. I could see Tommy Hawk and Gritty hanging out. So, I don't know what they're going to make of Gritty, though. I don't think a lot of people know what to make of Gritty.
I sure didn't.
Oh, I think he's the best. Now, you know, he's featured in the opening credits every week on John Oliver's show.
Yes, yeah.
Like in the top left corner.
Gritty.
There's Gritty up there. You know, when they're showing all the different images that are popping up, Hostess Mostess after that. But yeah, Gritty top left corner every episode. But he's had Gritty on like three times. They've had bits where Gritty has come out. He loves Gritty. Mm-hmm. John Oliver loves Gritty. By the way, did you see last week or last week tonight?
I did not because I no longer have an HBO subscription.
Oh, okay. I would have an HBO subscription just for John Oliver. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to have HBO.
Sure.
A lot of great movies, sure. A lot of great shows. But I would, even if it were only for John Oliver.
Yeah. Well, now I'm behind on Succession, behind on everything.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. The Deuce. You're missing The Deuce.
Yeah, that's true. Although I'm not a huge, I think it's good. It hasn't super grabbed me, but I think it's good.
Oh,
enough.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's not hitting me.
It's great. Maggie Gyllenhaal is unbelievable.
She's very good, but I have a tough time with anything with James Franco in it. Like, when I watched that first season, I was like,
I like him in it. I think he's great. I think both parts are fun. I just think that, like, they're capturing the time period in New York perfectly. It's the 80s now.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty Ralph Macchio rules.
Yeah.
I love that show. It's David Simon.
I understand.
You understand? All right. Do you have any favorite urban legend conspiracy theories?
I'm a big fan of alligators in the sewers.
Oh yeah.
So when that whole thing happened at the lagoon, I'm like, finally.
Yeah.
I'm being vindicated.
Yeah. Chance the Snapper. That was fantastic for a little while. The coverage of that, the alligator and what was he, Humboldt?
Yeah, Humboldt Park, and the lagoon.
It's fantastic.
But yeah, I love that. I love that there's some sort of, you know, insistence that there's gators living in the sewers.
Well, I mean, first of all, one of the greatest you know, animals gone wild movies of all time is Alligator, written by John Sayles, directed by Lewis Teague, who went on to direct Cujo. But Alligator's great because the premise is a kid flushes a tiny alligator down the toilet. And then, of course, the urban legend is you flush in the little alligator down the toilet. You know, he grows to be about, what was he, about 40 feet long?
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Weighed about a ton. Smashed up through the cement, smashed up through the roads because he was in the sewer. So, okay, so you like the giant alligators in the sewer bit.
I think that's funny, and I have to believe.
Yeah. All right. What about Area 51?
I can dig it, but it's not real. It's so beyond.
Well, we just had a pretty anticlimactic thing that happened a couple of weeks ago in Area 51 when they were going to rush it. They can't stop us all. And then,
I assure you, they can.
And yes, they can. It's the military, and there are warning signs everywhere that said, "Don't come in here. This is a a private military zone, and we will use force if necessary." But then all the lunatics were like, "We got to go storm and make sure that we get to see the aliens."
Well, they did have a fun kind of festival thing going on. Everybody's wearing,
little
green men.
Yeah, I mean, but not as many people showed up as they thought would. It was very, not well attended it was a 3-day festival and they had to cut down like a day and a half of it.
Yeah, but just to get the time off alone to travel to, New Mexico or Nevada? It's in Nevada, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Travel out to Nevada. How are you going to get there? All the kind of stuff.
Yeah. By the way, I'm watching Channel 9 News. There was a moose in a swimming pool and he just got out.
I feel like that's the setup to a joke.
No, there's a moose in the swimming pool. I don't know how the moose got in the swimming pool, but he ended up leaving. Now he's walking away. Good for the moose.
A little dip.
That's another conspiracy theory. A lot of moose. Moose like to go into people's swimming pools. They hang out in the swimming pools. Alligators are in the sewer. You got moose in the swimming pools. All right. Conspiracy theories. That's what we're talking about. If you guys want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. And what are your favorite urban legends / conspiracy theories?
Stop the car, let's make a midnight run across the river to South London to dance to the latest hype.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran, who's in Prague, and that starts at 6. Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, Triple Play Thursday.
312-981-7200. And what are your favorite urban legends and conspiracy theories? We're going to go through some classic ones here. And if you want to jump in at any time with your thoughts, it's 312-981-7200 for talking text, 312-981-7200. By the way, during the break, Tom, as I mentioned, I got a little distracted because I have two of the monitors here in the studio are always tuned to Channel 9, and the Channel 9 morning news, which is, the greatest morning news that you can possibly imagine, starts at 4. So I keep my eye on it just to see what's going on, see if there's anything really, going on. And I saw there was a moose in somebody's pool in their backyard. And I found that kind of amusing. And so our newsman, Vic Vaughn, who's always on top of things, told me during the break that what they were reporting on, why the moose was in this pool in the backyard of somebody's house, was because it is apparently moose mating season. It's moose mating season, and this moose is particularly randy, and that he's been jumping into people's pools and stuff, and so they're warning people, and this is in Bedford, New Hampshire, where this happened. They're warning people in Bedford, New Hampshire, that there might be a horny moose, basically. He's a little randy.
Oh, man, yeah, he's a moose.
And he's running around and jumping into people's pools and stuff because he's all randy. But I did not know that there was a moose. I guess this is moose mating season. Did you know that this was moose mating season?
I could feel it in the air, Nick.
Yeah, even here in Chicago. I mean, this was in New Hampshire.
The meese are going crazy.
Yeah. So it's moose mating season, everybody. In case you need another trivia tidbit to bust out at a party. Hey, everybody, did you know it's moose mating season? No, I didn't. You're a fascinating person. Wow. That's amazing. What other facts do you know? Nothing. It's just moose mating season. That's all I know. And that moose like to jump in pools during mating season. Or this particular Randy moose.
Randy the moose.
Yeah. Randy the Randy moose. So anyway, watch out for your pools. Because there might be a horny moose in them. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there. But it's important to know that. I didn't even realize there was a moose. I didn't know there was a mating season for moose.
Figured it was just year round.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I just, you know, I'm concerned about Bullwinkle. I don't know what's going on with him.
Bullwinkle?
Yeah.
You're acting strange.
Yeah.
What's wrong, Bullwinkle? Why are you wearing Drakkar Noir?
Why are you in the pool? See, now that would be okay if Bullwinkle was in the pool. They'd be like, yeah, it's Bullwinkle. Hang out, buddy. Would you like some sunscreen? Would you like a cocktail, Bullwinkle?
Ooh.
So. All right, so the moose are Randy. That's all I'm saying. So be careful out there if you're near a moose. All right. We got some conspiracy theories. How about this one? Some believe that Truman Capote wrote Harper Lee's famous novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. I've never heard this one before. You ever hear that one?
Yeah, I've actually heard that.
Have you? Really?
Yeah, because they grew up together.
Truman Capote and Harper Lee both grew up in Alabama and were childhood friends. They each went on to become celebrated authors. Capote wrote the true crime story in Cold Blood, and Lee wrote the great American novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. While Capote went on to write numerous books, Lee published only one other book in her lifetime, leading some to believe that Capote wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. In a 2010 documentary, Lee's sister, Alice C. Lee, denied the accusation, saying that Capote had been jealous of her sister's success. You know, I'm assuming that, well, first of all, maybe this was all, you know, like, and Truman Capote seemed like a guy who could have been pretty petty to me.
Yeah.
but you think they would get away with that if Harper Lee wasn't a woman? That's another thing. It's like, oh, that book is too good to have been written by a woman in that time period. You know, people thinking that. That's ridiculous. Truman Capote. Truman Capote, who would go on to be, you know, become very much like Orson Welles. You know when Orson Welles was at the peak of his filmmaking? Well, yeah, his first movie. Right out of the gate, the guy only made Citizen Kane. But he was like this incredible filmmaker, an incredible talent who was a groundbreaking talent in radio and in film. And then by the 70s, he was a big fat guy who appeared on The Tonight Show and on Match Game and stuff like that and became like a joke.
Now, let's not forget Paul Masson Wine.
Yeah. And he did like a fish sticks commercial, too. but yeah, so he became kind of a joke. Same thing happened to Truman Capote. Truman Capote, you know, who's this great writer, wrote this classic book and was obviously like, bon vivant, but he became, you know, like another guy would show up on The Tonight Show and then people would imitate him and he would show up at, you know, he was in a Neil Simon. I think he was in the Neil Simon movie Murder by Death. Yeah, he was in Murder by Death. And by that point, he was like a kind of a caricature. So, hey, which of the Capote movies, which one did you like better?
Of the Capote movies. So there's Capote with Philip Seymour Hoffman, right?
Right.
What's the other one?
It's the one with, oh God, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name right now. Well, the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman is better.
I mean, yeah.
I can't remember the name of the other movie. I can't remember what it was called. Because Capote was Philip Seymour Hoffman, and the other one was I can't remember his name. Look it up. You'll find it. And it came out like right around the same time. They both came out around the same time. And I can't remember the actor's name. So, anyway. So Truman Capote did not write To Kill a Mockingbird. Let's just get that straight right now. You know, there was also a conspiracy theory, an urban legend about Good Will Hunting. Because people didn't think that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon wrote it. They refused to believe that these two goofy Hollywood actors could write a script that good. So there was all this, and they win the Academy Award for it. So the rumor was that they didn't write it. And the person who they said wrote it, the rumor about who they said wrote it, I mentioned him already earlier this morning. People thought John Sayles wrote it. People were convinced that John Sayles wrote Good Will Hunting. And a lot of people were convinced of that, you know.
But why John Sayles?
Well, because John Sayles was a big Miramax guy, and he's a script doctor. But John Sayles is one of those guys who doesn't take he's a massive script doctor. John Sayles has rewritten a lot of scripts that his name's not on. So people went right to John Sayles. They thought that John Sayles wrote it, and a lot of people believed it for many years. You know, it was like, yeah, there's no way that these goofballs, Ben Affleck, couldn't write anything like that. And then all of a sudden, Ben Affleck does like The Town,
Gone Baby Gone,
and they were like, oh, maybe he can write.
Mm. Also, doctors called in. The movie was infamous with Toby Jones.
That's why Toby Jones. I couldn't remember his name, Toby Jones. But yeah, infamous. Which was pretty good, but not as good as the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Clifton Collins Jr. was fantastic in Capote. I keep calling him Clifton Gonzalez because that's what he's billed as in 187. He's so good in 187. 815 area code says, how about the flat earth conspiracy? I can't even believe that that's a thing.
That's just willful ignorance.
I just can't even believe that that's a thing. How about here's a urban legend, the haunted walkway near the Biograph Theater. Is it supposed to be haunted? Is Dillinger supposed to be haunting it? Is that the idea? Does Dillinger haunt it? Because he was killed right there. So, yeah. You know who played the best Dillinger? It's not Johnny Depp.
Who?
Warren Oates. Warren Oates, man, you can't do better than Warren Oates. It's impossible. All you got to do is watch Race with the Devil. Want some Warren Oates? He's so great. You know what he's great in? His last movie? Blue Thunder.
He should have been the spokesperson for like Quaker or something.
Because his last name is Oates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get your Warren Oates.
Okay. We're taking a break on that note.
Sow your wild Warren Oates.
Okay. I think Tom's been affected by the moose heat. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday, but that's not going to be a triple play. It's going to be a twofer. Who requested?
It's coming to us from Harold, and it's an interesting request. It's a band called Compressor Head, which is comprised entirely of robots playing hard rock covers.
Okay. I knew that wasn't Motorhead.
Mm-hmm. It's a robot.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't sound anything like Lemmy. Lemmy's got a very specific sound to his voice. Hello! How are you? You have a moose in your pool? That's the question.
Are you just happy to see me?
Because that's the question of the morning. Do you have a moose in your pool? Moose pool! Yeah. Hey, we're back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich follows the show at 5 with the opening bell right here on WGN. So we're talking about urban legends and conspiracy theories. We got some texts coming in. If you guys want to call us or text us on that topic, I'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 708 Eric says, Michael Jordan was out of basketball for a while because they said he was suspended for gambling. I don't remember that. Trevor from Antioch says, when I was young, my older stepsister told me people in Arizona had goats to eat grass because it was too hot to mow. I believed it until I was in my mid-20s when I asked my ex-wife's friend who lived in Arizona about her goat. And she told me it definitely wasn't true. You know, speaking of believing something into your 20s, have you ever heard, Tom, have I ever told you my Walgreens story? So I don't know if I've ever told you my Walgreens story. People who are regular listeners of the show know it, but I'll tell you about it if you haven't heard it. So have I told you my Walgreens story?
Your Walgreens story?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Prepare now. Prepare yourself. You are about to learn that you're working with an idiot.
Oh, now I'm about to learn.
Yeah, well, you've knew that a long time for now, but further proof that I'm an idiot. So when I was a kid, my uncle, who a few years after this, my aunt divorced, so I hadn't seen him. I have not seen him in many, 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 many years. Anyway, my uncle at the time said to me, hey, you know, we were talking and the Walgreens popped up. The name of, you know, the name of the chain of famous drugstores. And so he goes, hey, you know how Walgreens got their name, right? And I go, no. And he goes, it's because when they first opened their stores, all of the Walgreens walls in the stores were all painted green. So the walls were all painted green. That's why it's called Walgreens. And I went, oh, really? So I'm about seven when I hear this. So I'm at a party, and I'm in my 20s at this point. I'm like 22 years old or something. I'm at a party, group of people. We're all talking, and Walgreens came up for some reason. I don't know how it did. And I go, yeah, hey, you know why it's called Walgreens, right? And they go, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah. And I said, because, you know, when they first opened, all of the walls were painted green. That's why it's called Walgreens. And I'm like, straight face, I say this. Everybody in the room looks at me like I'm speaking Swahili. You know, they're looking at me like, what? And they go, what did you just say? And I said, yeah, all the walls were painted green when they first opened their stores. That's why it's called Walgreens. And they kind of like look at each other. A couple people are like laughing. And they look at, one guy looks at me and he goes, well, do you hear what you're saying? And I go, yeah. And he's like, it's not called Walgreens because the walls were painted green. It's called Walgreens because that's the name of the people who own the company. And I go, and then I just realized it. And I went, man, like 16 years ago, 17 years ago, my uncle lied to me. Like he lied to me. And so I believed it until I was at that party. Like I literally believed that the reason why the place was called Walgreens was because the walls were painted green. Believe that into my 20s, into my early 20s. I believe that. That's how stupid I am. But then it got me to thinking, like, how many times do you lie to your kids just to shut them up or to make them do something? And then maybe that kid believes the lie for a long time. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you do that kind of thing. Like, you just, like, you're tired of the kid talking. You just say, yeah, alligators are made of leather. You know, or whatever. Yeah. Moose like to swim in pools. Get out of here. But I believe that Walgreens was called Walgreens because the walls were painted green. That's why. And at that party, everybody was like, you are the biggest, everybody at the party was like, you're the and it was just like, it was relentless for about 2 months. Hey, let's go to the Walgreens because the walls are painted green. Ha ha ha, DiGilio, you idiot.
I mean, you kind of deserved it.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm not saying I didn't deserve it. And I would have done the same thing had I been that person who witnessed this idiot, like, sincerely think that Walgreens was called Walgreens because the walls were painted green. And I was that idiot. I'm like, you know, like a deer in the headlights. Yeah, it's Walgreens because the walls are painted green.
Shocking.
What the hell is wrong with you? Everybody was like, what is wrong with you? But then, I mean, seriously, it gets me to thinking about, like, have you ever told lies to your kid? You know, that the kid goes on to believe. This kind of ties in with conspiracy theories, kind of.
It's conspiracy against your kids.
Conspiracy against your kid. Just tell your kid some outrageous, quote-unquote, fact that they somehow believe into their adult years and then end up doing like a Walgreens moment like I did. But that's true. I've never told you the Walgreens story. No.
Walgreens.
Yeah. Because the walls are painted green. What?
I'm going to see who I could convince of that. I guarantee you I might be able to get some people my age to believe that.
Not your age.
I don't know.
I was seven, man. So it was like, oh, okay. But the fact that I went from the year of the age of seven to the age of around 21, believing that.
Walgreens.
Yeah, I'm not. It's not my proudest moment. So, yeah, you're working with an idiot. I just thought you'd need to know that. All right, how about this? 630 area code says, my favorite conspiracy is that bull sharks are in Lake Michigan. It stems from finding one in the Mississippi River as well as a possible attack years ago. There's no bull sharks in Lake Michigan. What?
It's load of bull something else.
Yeah. There's John on WGN. Hi, John. John? Okay. John was going to call in with the Paul is dead conspiracy, which we talked about with Robert Rodriguez last week. And that's that whole, you know, on the anniversary of Abbey Road, that's the whole thing where everybody was, you know, they had this whole stupid conspiracy theory about Paul McCartney being dead and that there were all these clues in the songs and on the album covers and all that stuff. And I believe, I'm convinced that the Beatles started playing along with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to print the legend, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. How about this? Is Mattress Firm in Chicago just selling mattresses? Do you know this?
Oh, I subscribe to this. There's no other explanation I've ever heard.
Really?
As to why there's so many Mattress Firms within, like, literally blocks of each other.
In 2018, a Reddit user brought attention to the fact that there was a high concentration of Mattress Firm stores in certain areas of the U.S., especially in Chicago. The Reddit thread quickly went viral with thousands sharing photos and maps that show Mattress Firm stores within a half a mile of each other, sometimes even across the street. This led people to theorize that the retail company is a money laundering business. Mattress Yes. Firm is some sort of giant money laundering scheme, one Reddit user wrote. I remember seeing four Mattress Firms all on each corner of an intersection at once. There was no way there was such a demand for mattresses. And a WBUR and Business Insider debunked the theory in 2018. And you're still hanging on to that.
It's strange to me because how often do people buy new mattresses? Like, literally, we're talking almost a decade, right? You could potentially have a mattress that's still pretty good for about 10 years.
Yeah, I guess.
You flip it on the regular. So how many people are buying or leasing new mattresses that would necessitate that many mattress stores that close to one another? This isn't like Starbucks where there's literally hundreds and hundreds of people buying coffee every single day. Yeah. Thousands of people buying coffee every day. That makes sense to me. Mattresses, you're buying once every maybe 5 years if we're giving the most, you know, shortest amount of time.
Do you know why it's called Mattress Firm?
Why?
Because when they first opened, all the mattresses were firm. Just like all the walls were green.
God, shut up. They had to soften them over time, man.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. That's why the walls aren't green anymore in Walgreens. They had to like temper it. Because people were, you know, when they first opened and every single store you walked in, it was nothing but green walls. People were getting mesmerized by the green walls at Walgreens. So they had to repaint over the years. All right. We got some more urban legends and conspiracy theories. And also, if you want to jump in, do you ever tell your kids any lies or were you ever lied to as a kid and you believed it? Like my Walgreens story? You have anything similar to that? We'd love to hear from you. Urban legends, conspiracy theories, all that fun stuff right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I am your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. right here on WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That wraps up Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! We'll do it again next week. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. All right, we are talking about conspiracy theories, urban legends, and maybe even lies that your parents told you or you told your kids, like the whole Walgreens thing. 312-981-7200 7200 is our phone number. How about this little mystery? What is the chamber behind Mount Rushmore really for? Ooh. It's for Cary Grant. That's what it's for. Most people know Mount Rushmore as one of the most recognizable landmarks in the U.S. as the faces of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt are carved into it. But not many people know there is a hidden chamber behind Lincoln's head. The sculptor, Gutzon Borglum, created an 18-foot door behind the landmark that leads to an open room that is 74 feet long, 35 feet high. Borglum intended to place America's prized possessions in this room. It was supposed to be called the Hall of Records. Don't you think it's a little distasteful to put a hole in the back of Abraham Lincoln's head?
Yeah, not super well thought out there.
I think you should have picked a different president to put... Don't you think that's like... Why are you picking Lincoln to put a hole in the back of his head, a door? Was it shown in... I'm trying to remember now, North by Northwest. Did they show the little secret? Because they're hanging on top of it, and Martin Landau goes flying. That's a good movie, man. Despite that kid trying to ruin it by sticking his fingers in his ears. In that one scene. All right, let's see. 312-981-7200. Here's Michael on WGN. Hi, Michael.
Morning, Nick. Good to be with you.
Thanks, buddy.
So this is a good one that my dad used to tell me, and it's kind of long, and I know you're running kind of short on time, so I'll try and abbreviate it as best I can for you. So in Oak Brook is the Peabody Estate. It's at like Route 83 and like 31st Street.
All
and
right.
It's named after a guy named Peabody who was like a wealthy politician or something. He died like in the 60s. And the rumor was is that they enshrined him in a glass tomb in the basement.
Uh-huh.
And after he died, I believe that the family that owned the estate sold it to like the Franciscan order or something like that. And it became like a monastery or something.
Okay.
And the rumor was is that if you were caught trespassing on the property, trying to look in the windows to see Peabody's tomb, and the monks caught you, they would bring you down into the basement, make you kneel at the glass coffin, and shave your head and pray to Peabody. Now, I'm like 9 years old, right? And my dad, you know, I grew up in Downers Grove, which is only a couple of towns over from
right,
Oakbrook. So
right.
Like, my dad like would drive us down Route 83, and he would point it out to us. And like, look, guys, like to me and my brother, who were like, we're kids at the time. Like, look, guys, that's Peabody's tomb. Don't ever go over there when you get older, because if the monks catch you, they'll bring you down to Peabody and make you pray to Peabody, and they're going to shave your head. And it's funny because as I'm sitting here on hold, I actually did a quick Google search on it, and there's nothing on the Wikipedia page about the rumor that he was buried.
Hang on a second, Michael. Hang on a second. Our own Mary Vandeville wants to jump in. What's going on, Mary?
Oh, Michael. So I live in Villa Park, and I grew up in that area. And this is what we used to do as teenagers in high school. We would drive to Peabody's tomb, that whole area. I don't remember that whole legend. I don't know if your dad came up with it on his own. It's a good one. But I just remember, you know, Peabody's tomb is haunted. And if you go over there, you know, you're going to be scared to death. And these people are going to be walking around in the grave sites and da, da, da. And I'm like, okay. So we just drove around through that area once in a while. I think we had some Boone's Farm. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it got a little crazy. And that was the thing to do at the time.
Did people dare each other to go into Peabody's tomb?
Yeah. Just drive around.
Yeah.
And then
my dad said when he was in high school, one time he and his buddies went up. This is like in the 70s sometime. He was like, oh, me and my buddies went over there one time. Because I asked him, of course. I'm like 10 years old. I'm like, so, Dad, did you ever get caught at Peabody's tomb? And he's like, no. He goes, me and my buddies, we went over there one night. And, you know, we just kind of like drove around the property. But, you know, we didn't get out or anything like that. But that's one that always kind of creeped
that's
me out.
That's pretty funny.
Yep, that's what we did, too.
Peabody's tomb.
That's pretty
the
funny.
The other one, really, really, really quick. The Country House restaurant in Clarendon Hills is supposedly haunted.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's on 55th Street.
Yeah, no,
there was some rumor that back in the 60s or the 70s, a waitress and a bartender got into some fight after the restaurant was closed, and she went running across 55th Street, and she got hit by a car. And the rumor is, to this day, that her ghost haunts that restaurant.
I never heard that. I've been to that place. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's, if you look at, like, you know, famous Chicago ghost stories, but that's right up there with, like, Resurrection Mary Bachelor's Grove and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty common one.
Oh, okay.
Country House Restaurant in Clarendon Hills.
All right, cool. All right, Michael, thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, take care. So Peabody's Tomb, huh, Mayor? You spent a significant amount of your childhood there?
I think we were more afraid of the police catching us
than
being scared. So that was the threat. That was always, you know.
But the whole shaving heads thing, you never heard that before?
I never heard that one. Yeah, that's pretty good, though.
That's good, though. I mean, if you want to scare the crap out of your kids, then you've heard my Walgreens story before, right, Mayor?
I think so.
That's because I believed when I was 7 years old, my uncle told me that they called it Walgreens because they shaved. They painted all the walls green. And so I actually said that at a party when I was in my 20s. I was like, yeah, that's why they call it Walgreens, because all the walls were green. And everybody looked at me like, are you the biggest idiot on the planet?
Yeah. And besides, wall only has one L.
I know. It didn't, none of that occurred to me. And I believed it from the time I was 7 to the time I was like 21 at a party.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. I'm a moron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. Okay, it's early.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Mayor.
All right. Stay away from Peabody.
I'm not going anywhere. All right. Here's Lake Geneva. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, Nick, when I was little, my dad told me if I got out of bed at night, the boogeyman would get me.
Good Lord.
I'm 63. I'm 63, and I still believe it.
So that's an excuse to just stay in bed all day and all night. Yeah, we lost Lake Geneva, Dan. They got bad reception in Lake Geneva, apparently. Or unless the boogeyman got him.
Oh, he's out of bed early!
Got him.
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, the boogeyman got Lake Geneva, Dan. It's true. We're live witnesses to the boogeyman getting Lake Geneva, Dan. He was there. He was on the phone. I didn't cut him off. Boom, gone, boogeyman. The boogeyman from Walgreens got him. Wow, I've never witnessed the boogeyman actually snatch somebody away right there, live.
Can't believe it. We have audio evidence.
Hold on to the audio evidence. David Duchovny and Jillian Armstrong are going to want it. All right, so finally, during the 1930s, Indiana-born John Dillinger became a national sensation and was named public enemy number one. He was wanted for the armed robbery of over 10 banks throughout Indiana and for stealing over $300,000. When he was arrested, he escaped prison by carving a gun out of wood and tricking the guards into letting him go. He had facial surgery to become unrecognizable. He was killed in an alley in 1934 after the FBI put out a $100,000 reward for him. This is where the conspiracy theories begin. Some believe that Dillinger was not killed in the alley because of rumors that said his body had brown eyes, and Dillinger famously had gray eyes. The body also had shown signs of illnesses the famous robber was never known to have. In 1963, the Indianapolis Star received a letter from someone claiming to be Dillinger, leaving many to believe that the criminal survived throughout the 1900s. Ooh. So Dillinger might not be dead. Well, he's dead now.
Yeah, definitely.
But
unless he's immortal.
He could be immortal. He could be the boogeyman. He could have just grabbed Lake Geneva Dan, took him to Walgreens with some green paint, and forced him to paint the walls green.
Come on now, you're going to paint, boy.
Or I'm taking you to Peabody's Tomb, and we're going to shave your head and then paint your bald head green. You got to love these conspiracy theories and urban legends. Resurrection Mary is one of my favorites. That comes up all the time. And, you know, we're getting near Halloween, so we'll have to talk about some of the ghost stories.
Yeah, we'll have to give Edward McClellan a call. He's got a great book on it.
Yeah. So, scary stuff. What are you planning on watching tonight? Because Tom's doing 31 horror movies in 31 days.
Well, I'm going to do... This is going to be my break day, and then
oh, you're
catch
taking
up
a break.
With two. Yeah, but I'm going to catch up on Friday with the 1-2 punch of Dracula and Frankenstein.
The originals from Universal.
Yeah,
those are good. Well, they're not good, they're great. Dracula was just on Svengoolie just this past weekend. He's showing Son of Dr. Jekyll on Saturday night. Hey, I want to let people know that on my DVR, it doesn't say Svengoolie, so you might want to check your DVR. If you have Svengoolie on your DVR, it says the title of the movie. So it will not record automatically if you don't change that. So go in there and look on Saturday, because mine says the Son of Dr. Jekyll, not Svengoolie. Just wanted to let you know, okay? You don't want to miss Svengoolie.